the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! And a great run! He's in trouble. He is dropped. Kyle Williams dropped it. Oh, baby, what a hit by Tyrod Brooks. Tyrod on the run. Nobody in front of him. Touchdown! There's T-Mobile.
He going to come through.
Sammy in the end zone. Got it! Got it! Touchdown! Sammy Watkins, touchdown, Buffalo!
McCoy, punch to the right.
Outrunning everybody. 10, 5, touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
Hi, everyone. Welcome into the John Murphy Show here on WGR Sports Radio 550 and on MSG Networks on your television. Thanks a lot for tuning in. Sal Capaccio here, filling in for Murph. Donald Jones here as well. This back in the saddle again with you. We did this a couple weeks around Super Bowl time. It was fun and glad to be back with you, man.
Yeah, it's been about a month and a half, something like that.
Oh, Super Bowl was that long ago? No. Yeah. Man, you're right. No, not quite.
About a month, right?
You're right, about a month and a half. I think it was February 5th, maybe.
Yeah, so.
Month and 10 days. That's crazy, man.
It's moving along.
Time goes by quick.
We are moving along.
Well, I mean, we're already into free agency.
Yep.
You got the draft coming up at the end of April, but before that even, the schedule's going to get released probably about a week before the draft. We got preseason schedule, gets out usually around first week of April, and then the regular season, the third week. The NFL just owns the year.
It does.
They own everything about the year, don't
they? It's football season, right?
No. Every day is football season.
It's football season.
All the time.
In this country, all the time.
And on top of that, the Bills, because they have a new head coach this year, they will be allowed to have an extra camp, like an extra mini camp.
Really?
Any team that hires a new head coach is allowed an extra mini camp. So we'll have one of those extra this year as well.
I remember my rookie year when I got here, it was Chan Gailey's first year here.
Mm-hmm.
So they were allowed to keep us up here as rookies the entire summer. I think
Wow.
we got like a week off for the summer when the veterans had like a full month. We got like a week off. We had the extra mini camp, you know, and then we had the rookie mini camp. And then my rookie year, we still had double sessions.
Oh, my goodness. Really?
Yeah, we still had the double sessions.
Are they even allowed to do that anymore?
No. I mean, so now I think you're allowed to – you have like a walkthrough.
You have
and
a walkthrough
practice.
And a
yeah.
practice.
But no, we had like true
– What year was this,
practices.
10?
2010.
Right, because the new CBA came in 11.
11,
so
yeah.
you
It was horrible.
You just missed out
oh,
on that.
Oh, man.
Right?
It was, these guys have it easy.
Oh,
man.
I know the country
they
club,
have
right?
It easy.
It's
yeah,
the country
it's
club.
Like, what? I go – now, so when we go to practice in August – you know, you go out there and these guys are in walkthrough. It's like, this is easy.
It's unbelievable. I everything was always harder back in the day. It doesn't matter what industry you're talking about, right? Today is a special day.
That's when my father or my grandparents, they always talk about, I used to walk 10 miles to school in the snow.
Uphill
like,
both
whatever,
ways.
Whatever, man.
There was never a downhill. It was only
exactly.
uphill both ways,
uphill,
right?
Uphill both ways.
All the time.
I had to.
When did you ever go downhill? I don't know. This is a special day today here in Buffalo and across the nation, of course, because it is the beginning of the NCAA tournament, and we're really excited to have it here in Buffalo. We're going to keep you apprised of everything going on because Buffalo is the spot where the tournament begins today. Around the country, all eyes will be focused on KeyBank Center downtown because you have Notre Dame and Princeton tipping off at 12:15 p.m. That's going to be really cool. You see on your screen there the games going on. We'll tell you about them. Right after that, it is West Virginia and Bucknell here in Buffalo. In the meantime, you have games tipping off around the country as well. You're going to have 16 games today. You're going to have 16 more games tomorrow, which is pretty amazing. And then 8 games on Saturday and 8 games on Sunday. Tonight, the defending national champions are in town. Villanova, they take on Mount St. Mary's, who won in their play-in game the other night. And that begins at 7:10 downtown. And then a really good game, Wisconsin against Virginia Tech. We get an 8-9 seed. That's the late game here in Buffalo. I am a huge Buzz Williams fan, the head coach of Virginia Tech.
Mm-hmm.
Not just because he's bald, Donald. I watched him.
You bald guys stick together.
That's right. I watched him a lot when he was coaching at Marquette, when obviously they were in the Big East with Syracuse.
Right.
I was down in Florida, used to go to a lot of USF games as well, and loved watching Buzz on the sidelines. He's one of those guys, totally gets into it. He's passionate. Loves his guys, but yells at them, has that fine line, you know, but it's really, I like watching coaches get into it like that.
You know, I like watching games like that because Virginia Tech is more of an up-tempo type of team.
Yep.
Wisconsin, they traditionally like to slow it down and they can shoot, you know, they have shooters, they have some big men. So when you have that matchup, it's like who ends up playing into the other team's hands, right? And
right.
what team plays their game? The team that plays their game is the team that usually wins. and March Madness, you know. So that game is, I think, is the best game of the group of games that's in Buffalo.
I agree.
I'm looking forward to seeing that one. Villanova, I'm going to both of those games. So yep. The Villanova game probably will be a blowout. I expect it to be a blowout. You never know in March Madness. You really never know. But I expect that one to be a blowout.
Defending national champs.
Right. And that game last year was it was unbelievable.
Amazing.
Against,
amazing.
UNC.
I'm glad Jay Wright finally has his title.
Yeah.
You know, he's a really good coach as well.
He's probably the best dressed coach in college basketball as well, too. You know, and speaking of dress, you know, in honor of March Madness, even though my Youngstown Penguins are not in it, I decided to wear this shirt today. You see the Y. Yes, no, it's not Yale or Yartmouth, like Andrew Peters said to me. It's Youngstown State, the Mighty Penguins.
I know it's not Yale. You did not have the grades to go to Yale. You did not.
I didn't have the grades to go to Yale, and I will admit that as well. Hey,
listen, don't worry, because there was a time when I actually I could have, quote-unquote, could have played what they call sprint football, lightweight football, at Penn, because mm-hmm. I was smaller coming out of high school, and I was a pretty good player, but I was small. Couldn't go to college to play like you did, but I couldn't actually get in there. It didn't matter how good of a football player I was. They weren't taking me at Penn. That was an Ivy League school, so that was not about to happen.
One of my boys, when I was my best friend growing up, he had an opportunity to go to Duke.
Oh.
He had one C on his transcripts, and they wouldn't allow him to get in.
That's amazing. For
one C.
Isn't that a
all
great lesson?
4 years, he would not get in with one C.
Isn't that a great lesson? Everybody listening?
Yes,
kids out there.
Yes, it is a great lesson.
Right?
I'm telling
one
you.
One C.
And I, you know,
now that's
me
Duke.
On the other hand. Yeah, it's
I mean, that's Duke. It's tough to get in.
It's tough to get into Duke. Right. In any other Ivy League school. But right. one C, it's like, come on. You can't, like, just pass me through. The rest of these schools are passing kids through.
I know. Well, today, by the way, we mentioned today's the tournament. Guess who's there? John Murphy is playing hooky from this show today.
He is.
To go to the tournament. He's like hundreds of thousands of other people around the country today. That's what he is.
I mean, you know, and everybody
Did you ever take off school or skip class to watch the basketball tournament?
No, I never did that. You know, when I was in school, I don't remember the tournament actually being in New York. I'm sure it was, but I just don't remember it.
Just
and
on
I never,
TV, like stay home and say, I'm not going to class today or anything?
No.
In college, nothing?
No, I never did that. Right. You know, the games during the day are usually not the good games. The games at night are usually the better games, right? In my opinion.
I don't think that's true. I think it's just because at night more people are watching.
Maybe.
And you get more into it.
Maybe.
But I guarantee you, around the nation today, people are gathered around at sports bars, taking time off. Murph's there. I'll be going tonight. But that's why we're here today. Murph gets a well-deserved chance to go downtown and enjoy the basketball festivities today.
Now, when I was in college, we were in spring ball time at this time, right? So, you know, we always had coaches that were going around to
mm-hmm.
see who's skipping class. And they would
go
check everybody's class.
Right.
So there was
that's
no skipping class to go watch any games.
I'm glad you brought that up. You know, I remember when I was at Syracuse and there were football assistant coaches who would peek their head in some classes
mm-hmm.
that we were in. I wasn't a football player, but there were football players in my class.
Right.
And that's what they do. A lot of times you don't realize those guys do check on you.
Yes, they do.
You're supposed to go to class.
You're supposed to go to class, and they will peek their head in, and they have their notebook, and they're
taking attendance.
So
there's no doubt. Now, in honor of the tournament today, ladies and gentlemen, I have – here we go. I came up with –
makeshift drum roll or something? I don't know what that is.
That's a paper. I'm unfolding my paper, but on TV you see I'm not really. I have come up with, Donald, 16 nicknames.
Okay.
Throughout history of NFL players,
mm-hmm.
all right? And throughout the show today, I'm going to have you vote on each nickname. I haven't even seeded them. I just kind of put them together, this against that, another one against another one, and we'll play off tournament style to come up with the best nickname
in
NFL history, or at least of the 16 that I've chosen
to
play with. So we'll do that today, all right?
Now, we'll
see where that goes.
I know you're asking me. Are you doing your own as well?
No, I'm not going. It's up to you, but I will kind of maybe try to sway you one way or the other by when we go through them. All right,
okay.
But it doesn't matter who the player is. It's only the nickname that counts.
All right.
Like, what's the cooler nickname?
Just the cooler nickname.
As a football player,
right?
All right, I think that's what we're going to do today. We also have, speaking of Princeton, Ross Tucker, who went to Princeton,
mm-hmm.
his basketball team, he played football there, is playing in Buffalo today against Notre Dame, and that's about to tip. He's going to be on the air with us while that's happening. Do you think he will be paying attention to anything that we say, actually, and ask him? That's the question.
Yeah, that is a big question, right? Like, Ross, did you hear me?
No? Ross, are you watching TV or listening
to
us
yeah,
ask
right?
you questions right now?
So what we should do is pull up the game on one of these monitors and then ask him a question about what just happened and see if he can answer that question.
He might be able to.
If he's watching us or if he's watching the game or listening to us.
Well, we will ask him about the Bills, of course, and about Tyrod Taylor, his restructured contract, coming back to Buffalo, what he thinks the prospects are for the Bills, what they might do in the draft, where they may go defensively, offensively. So we'll get into all of that with Ross Tucker at 1 o'clock today here on the John Murphy Show. Brian Cozio from WGR Sports Radio 550 is downtown. We're going to check in with him a little bit later at KeyBank Center during the games. So if you're driving around, we got you covered today. You don't have to worry about, you know, the games and what's going on. We will keep you abreast of all of the scores and what's happening down at KeyBank Center today. It's going to be a fun day today. I'm here, Sal Capaccio, filling in for Murph here with Donald Jones. We're here till 3 p.m., and we're taking your phone calls. 803-0550, 888-550-2550, the numbers to call. Donald, I want to really touch on the offense today and look at the offense as a whole. We put a Twitter poll out at John Murphy Show earlier today, and the Twitter poll says, what offensive position group has the best chance to improve from 2016 to 2017? I think this is fascinating where the results are going, because right now, wide receiver leads, and we gave you three choices, four actually, quarterback, wide receiver, tight end, or other.
Right.
If you want to vote fullback, because they've signed a couple fullbacks, I guess, you can do that. That's under other, of course. O-line would be under other. But quarterback, 23%, tight end, 14%, wide receiver, 47%. The reason why I think it's fascinating is I got a tweet, actually, that came in after this of someone said to me, I don't even understand the poll. Danny tweets in, I don't understand the poll. They haven't even done anything to wide receiver. Why would it have the best chance? Well, my response is then don't vote for it, first of all.
Right.
But almost half the people are voting for wide receiver. So you tell me, Donald. How can someone say right now that wide receiver has the best chance to improve in 2017 when really that wide receiver group is Sammy Watkins and then who knows what right now?
Mm-hmm. Now, when you talk about the Twitter poll and you say who has the best chance to improve, we're talking about who's on the roster today.
Who has the best? I would say no. Between now and you have to still think about what could happen in the draft.
Okay.
So what position group, compared to where they were last year, will we possibly be looking next year going, that group really improved?
I think it would have to be the wide receiver.
Explain why you think, because a lot of people are going, wait a minute, how can it improve? It looks like they're not really adding to the group, and they've lost Woods and Goodwin and Hunter.
You know, all right, first of all, you can see, even with the reports yesterday, even though, you know, it hasn't happened yet.
We don't know if Andre Holmes is going to sign or not. We just know there was a mix-up in the paperwork. So
exactly. They
could possibly still be out there, but he could possibly be a Bills target.
Exactly. Okay. So you can see that they're looking to improve the wide receiver position, right? So you look at last year's group. You had Sammy Watkins, who was hurt most of the year. You had Robert Woods, who was in and out of the lineup, but when he was in, he was a good player for this team. You had Marquise Goodwin, who had some injuries as well. He had some decent games. He wasn't what people wanted him to be, especially when Sammy went down and Robert Woods went down. Other than that, I mean, you had nobody, right? Everybody was hurt. You were signing guys off the streets like Justin Hunter, who came in, and he made big plays for this team. So that has to be the group that can improve the most because of that, because you didn't have anybody on the field for a full season last year. So you go now, you look to this season. Hopefully Sammy Watkins can stay on the field with his foot injury. We don't know how that's going to respond to another surgery that he's had. You bring in a number two receiver. I don't know if that's going to be through free agency and a guy like Andre Holmes or whoever else is out there, or if that's going to be the draft. I would think that they are going to draft one at some point. And I would think it's going to be fairly high, first or second round.
I think so too.
So when people are looking at, they haven't done anything yet. Yeah, that doesn't mean that they're not going to do something or they're not looking to improve. Like, they would be fools if they didn't look to improve their roster right now. By the way, I mean, who do you have on your roster who you can say is your number two wide receiver? You don't have anybody who you can say this guy is a number two wide receiver. And Sammy Watkins, you don't even know if he can play a full season yet. So you need to find another guy. So I would think that they're out there looking. Evidence shows that they're out there looking. So I think the wide receiver position has the biggest opportunity to improve based on where they were last year and what they can do this year.
Well, I think that that's where you have to start with this wide receiver conversation on, you know, when you think that or how you think it could possibly improve. Mm-hmm. I understand, like when Danny says, like, what have they done? I mean, we're looking at basically Sammy Watkins and then
got
a bunch of guys competing, right? Corey Brown, Philly Brown. Don't know what he's going to be. He's a younger guy that, you know, is going to come in and get an opportunity to play a little bit. Jeremy Butler. Well, don't know what he's going to be. These guys could just be depth special teams guys when it's all said and done. They're going to be fighting for roster spots. Colby Listenby, fighting for roster spots. That's what they are. But I do look back, and I think the reason why you get to it could improve, I don't think last year's group was all spectacular. No. It was a hurt Sammy Watkins, a very tough Robert Woods who fought through and had to play the number one role oftentimes, and I think that's going to be a loss for this team. But let's be honest, I think you still can improve from Robert Woods, Marquise Goodwin, Justin Hunter. You can. I don't think that was a group that lit the league on fire, especially considering they had to all take different roles and step up because Sammy was hurt all year.
Right.
So my answer could very well be wide receiver if for no other reason, Donald, that Sammy Watkins stays healthy.
Right.
If he stays healthy the whole year, I think you've automatically upgraded at wide receiver. And I don't really even care necessarily. I guess I do care who your number two is. It's just somebody who has to be about as competent as Robert Woods would have been, to be quite honest with you.
I mean, he definitely has to be someone who is competent as Robert Woods. He needs to be someone who can stay on the field as well. Your number two and number three. You know, I feel like your number two receiver needs to be able to be your number one or 1B if Sammy Watkins is not on the field, right? He needs to be able to do some of the same things that Sammy Watkins can do. So that's what they should be looking for in a number two wide receiver. And then you add the system. And how this system, I think, is really going to help out Tyrod Taylor because it's what he likes to do. It's going to – obviously, they're going to run the ball. It's going to be a power zone running system, right? But they're going to do a lot of play action and go down the field. I think that they can also get Charles Claymore involved. You might end up having another tight end on this roster who can get down the field as well. So if you bring in another solid wide receiver that is as almost as competent as Sammy Watkins – you get Charles Clay involved in this offense a lot more, it's going to be a better offense. So I feel like even though we're talking about –
I think you meant as competent as Robert Woods. Well, it's tough to get as competent as Sammy.
That's what I
mean. Maybe as competent, not as talented, certainly.
Yeah, yeah.
But you're right. I agree with you 100%. Like, Robert Woods is a fine player. There are other players who can do what Robert Woods did for you.
Right.
I like Robert Woods. I didn't want the Bills to lose him. But, of course, I'm not paying that much money for Robert Woods when I have to pay Sammy next year. That's a different conversation. But I agree with you that – you can find guys like Robert Woods to do that for you.
Right. You can.
So if you have a healthy Sammy and Robert, maybe, I mean, I think you're banking on some things, though. Can Listenby be a guy that can contribute with his speed, right? I do like the chances, at least for one of these guys, Butler or Philly Brown, to emerge as something, as a guy they can use as a three or a four, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I think you do have chances for guys like that. And let's face it, up until last year, Marquise Goodwin did not stay healthy. Last year,
right.
He did.
Mm-hmm.
He missed one game. But these guys, if they stay healthy, I think they can at least be a part of that role. So it is very interesting. Now, tight end is a little different spot, but you mentioned Andre Holmes. What do you like about Andre Holmes?
Well, you know, J.J. Torito, got to give J.J. a shout out.
What is J.J.'s official title? Is he executive producer?
I'm not sure.
Producer? Director?
Sure. We got to ask.
Watcher of talent? I don't know.
He might come
is.
In through your ear right now.
I'm waiting for Jay or J.J. to tell me what is a
J.J.'s like, get
associate
my title
producer.
Okay, associate
He's not
producer.
Associate to the producer. He's the associate
producer.
What does he say about him?
He loves – there he is
there he
right
is.
There on the screen.
He's waving.
He loves Andre Holmes. He's been talking about him since we started talking about wide receivers and how you can improve this roster. And he's the one that brought it up to me because I wasn't someone who really looked at Andre Holmes. But when you look at him and you – a lot of people now that we're talking about him, you're going to bring him up on YouTube and highlights and stuff.
Right.
When you watch him, first of all, he's 6'5". So he's a bigger target who can get down the field for you. I'm not sure how fast he is, but he has shown that he can get down the field. His body control is very good for someone his size. He can jump. He can twist his body. He can make crazy catches. He really can. I think the only reason he was not playing a lot more is because he was sitting behind Crabtree and Amari Cooper. And then you had Seth Roberts running the slot. You know, So Andre Holmes is running that X behind Amari Cooper. So I think with his size, his body control, first of all, he can help you in the red zone, but I think he can get down the field and make crazy catches in an offense that you know is going to be play action and go down the field. So I think he could fit into the system very well.
And they just lost Justin Hunter.
Exactly.
Tall, wide receiver, red zone guy.
He's taller than Justin Hunter.
Yeah, he is. He's an inch taller, listed that way. Justin Hunter was a guy who he had 10 catches last year, 4 for touchdowns. Mm-hmm. I thought he did well when he was on the field, but they couldn't use him outside the 20s, really,
right,
because he's not a great route runner.
Mm-hmm.
He also has no special teams value, so we'll see. But I'm glad Jose called in here because he has a question I think that's on a lot of people's minds since we're talking about Andre Holmes. What's going on, Jose? Jose, you there? Oh, wait. Let me get you back on, Jose. There you go, buddy. What's going on?
There you go. Hey, Sal. I mean, yeah, I mean, because this is Wikipedia, ESPN, and everybody's reporting that Andre Holmes is here. He did sign. They actually put the details of the contract
yesterday.
This is one. And
I'm going and you want to know what happened. Okay, let me explain, okay?
He's an upgraded Justin Hunter because he can run routes very well. I've been watching a lot of tape on him, and he's a very good route runner, better than Justin Hunter. So I believe he's an upgrade. So, I mean, maybe you guys can know what's going on with that. Or
I will, Jose. Thank you very much. I'm gonna hang up with you, and if you can listen, I'll explain it. Okay, buddy?
Yep.
Okay, thank you. Here's the situation with Andre Holmes as I understand it, okay? This is the process when you sign somebody, how it works. First, you have to submit a formal offer to the player's agent.
Mm-hmm.
When that offer gets submitted, it actually goes to the NFLPA. When a formal offer gets submitted to the player's agent, it gets logged by the NFL Players Association. They keep a record of that. When a player signs a contract, there's also a record of that contract.
Right.
Obviously, it's two different things, offers versus signed contracts.
Right, and it's all in one database.
And it's all in one database, but there are two different sections for it, I believe. There may even be two databases, but it's all accessible.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, the point is, apparently what happened here was, from what I can gather, the Bills made Andre Holmes an offer.
Right.
Someone at the NFLPA mistakenly categorized it as a signed contract. From there are certain media members who have, but are not supposed to have,
mm-hmm,
access to this database. They get it from agents. They get it from people they know at the league office, whatever. Right. Yesterday, two ESPN reporters found this contract in the signed contract section of the database,
mm-hmm,
and said, oh, the Bills must have signed Andre Holmes. And they tweeted out the details. Andre Holmes says, I never signed a contract. The team says, no, he did not. So it appears here what happened was it was a simple human error from the NFLPA side of things that someone over there put it in the wrong category of signed contracts. And then people in the media who were not supposed to even have this information in the first place got a hold of the wrong information and put it out there, which makes everyone kind of look bad in this situation.
Right. It makes everyone look bad. And then the NFLPA came out and they were upset.
They were upset last night.
That people in the media are reporting it. And they were upset at the agents, obviously, for giving out their credentials.
Correct.
But the first mistake was at the NFLPA for mistakenly logging this into signed contracts.
That's right.
So you can't be mad at everybody else, first of all. And this goes to show when we talk about the role that agents play when things get leaked and stuff like that, right? The agents benefit from giving out their credentials to reporters, right? Because if a reporter goes and tweets something like this out, even though it hasn't been signed yet, well, now that player, everyone now sees that the Bills are on this player. And so he might get another team to come in and say, listen, we want this kid and we want to pay him this, which might be a little bit more than what the Bills are offering, right? So
right.
The NFLPA, they know that. The reporters know that. Agents know that they benefit. So it's going to happen. It's going to continue to happen. And they can't even prove that people are giving out their credentials, even
that's
though right. We know that's what's happening.
That's right. And I was told, and I don't know if this is like officially true or not, but someone who I know who works closely with these sorts of situations told me that the NFLPA even told some people last night, like you could be suspended if you give out this information, which is probably true. They probably signed something that says, I'm not going to give out these credentials, right? So you do. It's like giving out a password to a company that has, you know,
yeah,
that has rights over this stuff. So anyway, I think that's where the mix-up came in. So where can we go from here? So it appears, at least then, that at least the Bills in some way, shape, or form, whether it's an official offer, which would appear as it could be, in some way, shape, or form, they're interested in Andre Holmes. I think we can at least say that, right?
Right. And
so we don't know where that stands right now, and he could still wind up signing, or he might not sign.
And we know that there was an offer sheet that
that is what it appears to happen.
We know that they made an offer to him. So you know that the Bills are out there looking for a receiver.
That's right.
They're trying to bring someone in here. So when people say they're not doing anything at wide receiver, no, they're doing something. They're trying to find the right guy at the price for the money that they have left in the piggy bank.
That's right.
And that's all they have is a piggy bank. Like, they don't have you know, M&T or Key Bank or anything. They have a piggy bank at home that they're scratching quarters and dimes and pennies together trying to get someone in here with some talent to be a number two or draft somebody or
well,
both.
They have a little bit of money. I think if my calculations are right, about $12 million to spend before, not including, you have to – the draft will be taken care of. They have like maybe 17 or 18. Then they have to take care of their draft picks. That next year down to about 12. So they have some money to play with. But you're right. They're not going to go out. And they're not going to sign a guy to a huge money contract to play opposite Sammy Watkins. They're just not going to do that. They would have tried to keep Robert Woods if that was the
case. Exactly. They would have tried to keep Robert Woods.
So they're not going to do that. It appears as though their strategy for wide receivers is to go younger and cheaper and hope someone emerges. Because let's be honest, in this day of an age of NFL football, Donald, you can find a lot of guys who are like that who actually can wind up playing.
You can.
I mean, I hate to – I'm not saying that everybody's like this. It's not, because it's very rare. But look, Antonio Brown was a sixth-round pick.
He was.
Right? I mean, and look what he did. Here in Buffalo, we saw Stevie was a seventh round
pick.
Right? I mean, we saw guys, we've seen guys who can come on and they can play. So usually you do have your higher end guys, though, if you want to take early. Wide receiver is one of those positions. When we were on together last month, we went through wide receivers and said, usually taken high, you have a pretty good success rate to get a good guy.
Yeah.
Sammy Watkins is another one. He's very talented. He's been hurt. So this appears to be their direction with wide receiver.
But even in that draft that Sammy came out, and this is the argument we get all the time, you look all the way down that draft, fourth, fifth round, there are guys that are balling in this league from that draft. That
Brandon
Sammy
Cooks,
came out.
Who just had that trade.
Right. These guys are balling, and they found them way down in the draft, just like an Antonio Brown. So they're talking about this receiver class being one of the better classes to come out of college.
I agree. And I think I'm all for, if they can get a Corey Davis at number 10, I'm fine with that. But I could also wait and get a guy like Zay Jones in the second round, who I think is really good. And East Carolina, his wide receivers coach is now coaching the Bills wide receivers. He's the all-time leader in college football receptions at the FBS level. He's a really good player. John Ross had that incredible time. At the Combine, he has had some injuries, however.
I told Murph I wouldn't touch John Ross with his hands.
Tell me why.
I just don't – you know, he's fast. We know he can run a 4.22, but I just don't think he can play receiver, and that will transition into running routes at this level, him being able to separate from DBs. Because when you're that fast, it's hard to break down and run routes.
That's a good point.
You know?
You have to slow play it sometimes.
Yes, you do have to slow play it. And he can transition. I think it's going to take him some time to be able to understand the art of running a route in the NFL, running a 20-yard. I mean, you're talking about a guy who runs a 4.22. So he's getting to top speed by the time he's at 20 yards. And if you run a 20-yard comeback and you get to top speed, there's no way physically you can stop and come back on a comeback. So he has to learn how to slow play it, how to change how fast he's running.
Use his body control, his balance, right?
You know?
That's
and
a great point.
I think it's going to take him some time to do that. You know,
no, that's
plus
really...
he has chronic knee issues, and he's about to have a shoulder surgery. So I just wouldn't touch him in the first round. I'm
with you. I don't think that's the guy you target, especially at 10. If you're down in the 20s, you need a speed guy.
Right.
Maybe you can justify it, right?
Exactly.
I think that's too high where the Bills are. The time is flying by. I didn't even realize. We got to take a timeout right now. We got phone calls loading up right here, so we'll get to them when we come back. Sal Capaccio here with Donald Jones talking about the Bills' offense. What position do you think has the best chance to improve from 2016 to 2017? We're going to talk about the tight ends when we come back, because it's interesting how the Bills have been linked to some pretty big names and big talent at tight end this offseason. We'll get into that when we come back here on the John Murphy Show on WGR and on MSG.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back here to the John Murphy Show. Here on WGR and MSG. Sal Capaccio here with my man, Donald Jones, who is about to venture into the world of of NFL player nicknames.
Mm-hmm.
Got college on the brain today because of the tournament going on. All right, so we got a couple of these. Now, I have not seeded them. I just kind of just threw them randomly together. All right, but we're going to give you a couple at a time here. And we're going to go through some nicknames. I'll tell you the two nicknames, and you tell me from a football perspective, we'll kind of debate a little bit, is describe what you think about it. And from a football perspective, what is the better nickname? We got 16 of them. All right. So the first up on the list, if we can throw it up on the screen and we can tell everybody about it, because I don't remember exactly which way I gave it to my man Jay Harris there. There we go. All right. Night Train versus Too Tall. It is Dick Night Train Lane, Ed Too Tall Jones. All right. Now, are you familiar?
I'm familiar with both.
Okay, you are.
From a football perspective, I think Night Train is the better nickname because when you think about a train and a locomotive and the position he played and just running through somebody, I just feel like Night Train is a better football nickname than Too Tall Jones.
Yeah, and obviously
Too Tall just sounds like a basketball
player. Too Tall, right?
Yeah, like too tall.
What was he too tall for?
Right. Like,
is he too tall to play football? I mean, come on, right?
Yeah, I'm sure people said
that. He played, and he's really good.
Yeah.
He was really good. He was not too tall to play football.
Than a football name.
Maybe he was too tall. Let's see the origin of the nickname for Ed Too Tall Jones. All right, here, I'll read it to you. The origin of the nickname for Ed Too Tall Jones was, hold on here, I got to find it here. Now I can't even find this darn thing. But anyway, usually I have it there. I do have Night Train Lane. This is interesting, though. Are you ready for this?
Mm-hmm.
So, Dick, Night Train Lane. Due to his fear of flying, Lane rode a night train to away games while the rest of the team flew.
Wow.
It was not about actually, like, flying past people through the night.
Yeah.
Physically on the football field. It was more about flying through cities in the night on a train. But I agree with you. This is your call, but I would agree with you in this. I think Night Train is a very cool nickname.
Yeah, I think I like Night
Train. It's kind of mysterious.
But
you wonder.
I mean, he wouldn't fly. Wow. I wonder how many players now, and I'm sure it's a lot, like literally hate flying and wish they could take the train. I mean, you get fined if you do that now.
Right.
A lot of money, but, you know, when we travel, I see some of the guys, I watch some of the guys, and they're like grabbing the seats.
Right.
Because they're scared of flying. It's the funniest thing. It's like, dude, you actually sacrifice your body and your life when you get on the football field and you're scared of flying?
I wonder if – now, Ed Too Tall Jones actually did box a little bit. I wonder if the name – and someone's going to tell me and say, how do you not know this? But honestly, I don't know if his name came from – it was before my time.
Yeah.
He played great when I was born.
Way before my time.
So I don't know if the nickname came more from when he was boxing or when he was playing football. But he did box a little bit. So
maybe
we're going to go with
box.
So we're going to go with Night Train, okay, for the first winner here.
Okay.
All right, let's do number two, and then we'll get to some phone calls. All right, the second one on the list, who will Night Train go against? The winner of, here you go, I did this on purpose to you. You have to choose between two of your former teammates' nicknames. Beast Mode, Marshawn Lynch, or Amish Rifle for Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Ryan Fitzpatrick.
So what is the better football nickname? Beast Mode or the Amish Rifle?
I mean, I'm sure everybody's going to say Beast Mode just because.
Because it's football?
It's football, you know, and he was a beast on the
field.
You don't
have to?
No, I have to go with that one. Beast
okay.
Mode, because that's more of a football nickname. Like, and he was a beast on the field. You remember the YouTube clip, and it was like, put the team on your back, though.
Right,
And you remember the huge run he had in the playoffs. I mean, he was Beast Mode. And I just feel like that's more of a football nickname than the Amish Rifle.
Yeah, Amish Rifle doesn't scream football to me, but
it
does fit Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Like, if you didn't know who we were talking about and you just said Beast Mode, Amish Rifle, related to football, you're going to go Beast Mode before Amish Rifle.
If you didn't know what we were talking about, you would not think Amish Rifle has anything to do with football.
Exactly, exactly.
You would think it might be somebody in the Olympics or something
right.
like that.
But you would think somebody with like a beard and somebody who's shooting.
Ladies and gentlemen, representing the country of whatever, the Amish Rifle in the skeet shooting contest, right? But
right.
Beast Mode does fit football. All right, so our next round, so Jay knows back there, Jay Harris, will be Night Train against Beast Mode. We'll get to two more in just a little while from here. Well, I got to tell Fitz that you eliminated him in the first round.
No, my bad.
Your
Fitz.
Man Fitz.
My bad.
You eliminated him in the first round of this
tournament.
You
know, Fitz this year, I think he had some duds in his rifle.
That's even worse.
That
He'll
is
be
worse.
Mad at
That's
you.
Worse. Fitz,
right.
I'll give you a call later, man.
Let's go. Greg in Rochester. We'll go out to him next. Hold on. I'm having problems with the call screener here. Let me see if I can just – here we go. Hold on, guys. I will get to it. I can do this. I've done this before. All right. Can we go out to – Greg in Rochester. Hi, Greg. I don't think I have Greg. Someone's going to have to put him on for me. Thank you. Go ahead, Greg.
Let me get Greg up.
Go ahead, Greg.
Hey, I'm here. Hey, talking about free agency, I know fans want the big splash, but they had a ton of holes to fill. I think Whaley's doing a good job of plugging away at it, really. But with $12 million left, that's roughly what you said. There's big needs for a number one corner and a number two wide receiver. Everybody knows it. The names that are out there, I got three names for you, Sal, that I think you could fill a lot of these spots with. One would be Morris Claiborne. He's still out there. He'd probably be the biggest chunk of the cap that's left. But he's his own guy. He showed last year that he, you know, he was a bust until last year. Last year he was good until he got injured. They should make that move. The second name is Darrell Revis. I heard he would play for the vet minimum. You know, I think he'll have a bounce back year. He's not a bad character guy. I know McDermott is all about character. I like Revis bouncing back and then playing in the division and sticking it to his two old teams. I think that would be a good move, especially for the vet minimum, maybe moving him to safety. He said he would be open for that. They should be on the phone with him right now. And the last name is a character concern, but he's maybe the best wide receiver in the NFL, and that's Josh Gordon. And I think you could get him for multiple years with no risk, write the contract that if he gets suspended, that he gets no guaranteed money.
He is not a free agent.
He's not. I thought I saw him on the free agent list.
What's his he's not a free agent because of his suspension. He never got an accrued year, so he's still property of the Browns.
Trade him a seventh-round pick.
Well, you can't force them to do that. I think they want to keep him right now is the point. That's up to the Browns. So, I'll talk about your other. I get it. I wouldn't mind actually bringing a guy like that in either, but all that talk is doesn't matter if they don't want to trade him. You know what I mean? You get my point?
Yeah, I get your point, but they'll trade him. They're playing money ball, and Josh Gordon's not in their long-term plans. They can make it happen.
Okay.
Is a problem. McDermott can make an example of him. He could say, hey, we're not playing this games anymore. We're giving this.
Oh, so I really honestly did not mean to cut you off because I actually do want to touch on your points, and I apologize for that, Greg. Thank you very much for the call. I did not mean to cut you off like that. I'm trying to play around my call screener here, and I hit the wrong button. But I do want
to
talk about Claiborne and Revis.
On the job. Are you learning on
I know.
The job?
This is my first day here. Right. Let me ask you this. He said something. Greg said something about the corner spot. He said they need a number one corner.
Mm-hmm.
I don't agree with that. I think their plan is to have Ron Darby as the number one corner.
Yeah.
Now, you could tell me, and Greg or anybody else can say, well, that's a horrible plan, if you think that. But I'm telling you, I think their plan is Ron Darby's their number one, quote-unquote, corner. And from there, you would fill spots in.
In a cover two scheme, do you have a number one corner?
Cover two, cover three, in a zone scheme? I don't know if you do.
In a zone scheme, do you have a number? I don't think you have a number one corner because if you have a man team, your number one corner typically follows. I mean, every team is different, but you're talking about a lockdown number one corner usually follows your number one receiver. In this scheme, that's not going to happen.
Right.
You're going to have a left and a right corner.
Yep.
So do you want to pay top dollar for a left and a right corner? Now, obviously, these guys still have to make plays. They still have to make plays. So you need talent on the roster.
Would you want to sign Morris Claiborne? 27.
27.
Had some injuries.
Right.
He has not performed the way a top pick should perform. He was a high pick in the draft.
Right. I don't know about signing. You look at the corners that are still out there right now. Can you bring one in at the right price? Yeah, you can.
How about Revis?
Revis, I think.
Would you bring him to play safety? Him to play corner?
No.
I'll sign a cheap deal, but I'm playing corner.
No. I would not do that. Revis showed last year. I mean, in his own scheme, he might, you know, he's smart. He's a smart player. He knows what he's doing, regardless if it's man or zone. I just don't think he has it left in the tank, athleticism, I'm talking about, to play the corner position.
I think he started to decline 2 years ago, actually. I don't think it was even last year, where last year was more noticeable. I thought 2 years ago when I was doing prep work against that, when he was whether it was New England or the Jets or whatever, I remember thinking, though, he's just not the same guy.
You know, last year he started to say things like every week, like, I'm getting old.
Right.
And when you start to say that, like, dude, it's like in your mind, you know, I can't get it done anymore at this position. So I think last year really showed, like, the first year that you're talking about 2 years ago, he started to decline. Last year it was like he saw it and let everybody know, listen, I'm getting old, and I know I can't do this anymore. So I think, he probably wants to move back to safety. Like, I don't know if he even wants to play corner anymore.
Maybe he just wants to play football. So here's a question for you, Donald Jones. Percentage chance Darrell Revis is on an opening day roster in 2017. Any opening day roster.
I think a team will take a shot.
You think so?
Yeah. Now, percentage-wise.
You think he'll stick through camp, too, and make the team and play?
Yeah, because I think he's smart enough to play safety,
okay,
the free safety position. I think he's smart enough to understand and get guys in the right position. And even though he couldn't play the corner, lockdown man-to-man, he wasn't, I think he still has it, and he has enough in the tank to go sideline to sideline and play safety and catch interceptions. I think he can get that done for you. So I think a team will take a shot, and they will take a shot sometime soon, especially now that all his charges were dropped, they're going to take a shot on him and put him back there at safety and see if he can get it done. And I think he's smart enough, and he still has enough in the tank to get it done at the safety position.
Let's go out to John in Wellsville. Hi, John. You're on the John Murphy Show.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking me.
Mm-hmm.
I have one question and one comment on the poll. My question is do we know anything about Mike Gillisley thus far? And my comment is, I think the biggest improvement, it has to be at quarterback, because if Tyrod can't place the ball where the ball needs to be placed, then we could have all the best receivers in the world, but it's not going to make a difference.
So you think it needs to be, but do you think it will be, is the question, John?
I think it will be now that he has Rick Dennison as okay.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting point. Let me touch on, because I got to get to a break, let me touch on Gillisley. Thank you for the question. As far as anything we have heard, anything I know, anything that's been reported, Mike Gillisley has yet to even visit anywhere, let alone right. have an offer sheet given to him.
And
he's a restricted free agent, so a team would have to give him an offer sheet. And if the Bills did not match that offer sheet, the team that gave it to him would have to give up a fifth-round pick.
And when's the deadline?
The deadline to do that is April 15th.
Right.
Okay, so you still have a month. Now, here's the thing. Look around, folks. The running back market has not really materialized.
No, it's not.
Adrian Peterson is still out there. Latavius Murray just replaced him in Minnesota. You're not giving him a big deal.
Right.
Rex Burkhead, where'd he go? New England, right? I mean, these are not guys that everybody's clamoring to get. Mike Gillisley is a fine player. He's a good player. I agree with everybody, and I'm glad that the Bills are right now looking like they're going to keep him, at least the way it's set up. However, you know, I don't think, as good as he might be or might fit somewhere, I don't think teams want to give up a fifth-round pick for a running back.
I don't, because you can find one.
That's
in the
correct.
Round, you know, and so you're talking about giving up a fifth-round pick plus paying right. him, you know, at least matching what he's already been offered, which is and one if, point
and if,
whatever.
And if he were to be the number one bell cow back for a team, don't you think they'd be in on him already?
Right.
Like, a team would have gone out and spent some cap dollars early on
yeah.
to get a bell cow back. So the fact that he has not had that offer to him tells me most teams see him what he is with the Bills, a backup running back.
A backup running back. A short – well, he can break loose, and mm-hmm. he can take it the distance because of how fast he is. But, you know, he is a backup running back, and I think teams are seeing that. You look at a guy like Adrian Peterson, I think he's going to be in camp. But it's going to be late when he
right.
gets signed, you know. Even in Jamal Charles. Running backs today, they're looking for guys that can catch the ball out of the backfield. That's not what Adrian Peterson is known for doing.
Right.
Jamal Charles, yeah, but he has so many injuries.
It's not really what Mike Gillisley's
Mike
known
Gillisley,
for doing.
Exactly. You know, he's not known for doing that. So if you're talking about paying over $1 million, maybe $2 million to get him away from here, plus giving up a fifth-round pick, it doesn't make
it's
sense.
It's not as easy as some people think.
Right, and you can probably find one in the fifth round.
Correct, especially in this draft. It's a good running back draft, right? So I think, to ultimately answer your question, John, I think the Bills are going to slow play this. I think they're going to wait on Gillisley to see and let the market settle, and if he gets an offer, they'll address it. But if not, then they'll approach him about maybe signing long-term, and they have him at 1.8 next year anyway.
Exactly.
We'll take a timeout. Stick with us. Jay, you're up next, so we'll get to you when we come back. Donald's going to do a little bit more of this tournament-style mm-hmm. NFL nickname as we go on as well here on the John Murphy Show.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
All right, welcome back here to the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts here on WGR and on MSG. Hey, the Bills Schedule Challenge is rolling on once again this year. Make sure you take a shot at the Bills Schedule Challenge for a chance to win two club seats for this upcoming season and season tickets. Two on-field passes for the home opener and one autographed helmet as well. Each question answered correctly counts as an entry, and you answer those questions and get started over at BuffaloBills.com. So make sure you go and check that out. It is exciting, the schedule every year. We're about a month away from the schedule being released. We don't know the exact date.
It's definitely exciting because you get to see if your team is going to be prime time or
yeah,
or
I know. Now we know the opponents.
Yeah, you know the opponents. So you don't know when it's going to happen.
Right.
So for people who are Bills fans that live in that market, you know, they get to find out, okay, this game is going to be on this date. I can go buy my tickets, and I know, right. You know, people can start setting up for September. You know, it's football season now.
It is. I agree. It's always football season, and that's the thing about it. Someone said to me last year, what is the big deal? It's an NFL schedule. I'm like, yeah, but people revolve their entire autumns around it.
I'm telling you.
I mean, they do. Like, they make plans, travel arrangements, family get-togethers. That's why it's such a big deal, and that's why the NFL schedule release is cool. It's about a month from now. Head over to BuffaloBills.com, and you can take part of the schedule challenge before it is too late. All right, can we put up a couple other nicknames on the screen and do these before we get on out of here and take another call here in this segment? We'll do that. We'll put a couple more on the screen, and then I'll read them to you, Donald. Mm-hmm. And Donald is doing 16 nicknames. He's got eight different, you know, contests here, and then we'll go on to the next particular group after you get them all done. Mean Joe Green, part of the Steel Curtain Steelers defense against Slingin' Sammy Baugh. Mean Joe Green, Slingin' Sammy Baugh.
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously this is like quarterback league and all of that
stuff.
So the whole slinging term is slinging it around. But for me, a football, when you think football, you think toughness. You think of when Mean Joe Green was playing and that Steelers steel curtain, all of that stuff. Mean Joe Green is just a better football nickname just because you think that toughness, grit, and Pittsburgh and all of that stuff. So I got to go with Mean Joe Green.
I would actually choose Slingin' Sammy Baugh. I love it. Slingin', baby. That's a great nickname. You're slinging it all over the place. I always say on the air, I want a quarterback who's going to sling it. That's Slingin' Sammy Baugh. But that's all right. You're going to go Mean Joe Green. He joins Night Train and Beast Mode in the Elite Eight. Who joins them in the Elite Eight? We got one more. We'll get half the Elite Eight here on the next one. Here we go.
Actually not.
Sweetness. Walter Payton against Broadway Joe Namath.
Right.
Sweetness against Broadway Joe.
I mean, the better nickname is Sweetness. And it's not even just because he was probably the best running back ever. Sweetness, though.
Isn't that awesome?
I mean, that's a great name. Sweetness. Ah. You know, Broadway Joe is.
I mean, wouldn't you love if your nickname was Sweetness every day?
It kind of sounds like.
And if every room you walked in, people would just call you Sweetness instead of Donald?
I'm telling you, I love it. Like, yes, that's what I'm talking about.
I mean,
what's my name? Sweetness.
What would your wife say? What would she say?
If everybody called me Sweetness?
Yeah, would she roll her eyes or would she call you Sweetness?
She'd probably roll her eyes if she heard everybody else saying it. But, you know, she would probably love I would love her to call me Sweetness.
I know, right? I know. Like, why can't our spouses and girlfriends call us Sweetness? My new nickname is Sweetness.
That's right.
Call me Sweetness.
Call me Sweetness.
No, I'm not doing that. I am not calling you
That's
Sweetness.
That's the best nickname.
All right, so we got four of the Elite Eight. We got Night Train, Beast Mode, Mean Joe Green, and Sweetness. We'll get to those in a little while. Jay in Rochester, what's up, Jay? You're on the John Murphy Show.
Yeah, man. Really have none to talk about nicknames here, but I think Sweetness and Mean Joe Green are two of the best for sure. By far.
Thank you.
Just a comment for you. I know we're talking about, you know, really, let's be honest here, bringing in what I'll call tier two level free agents. Uh-huh. Trying to fill depth. We're trying to get guys that may contribute, that we may find a diamond in the rough. How come nobody's talking about, you know, Russell Brandon and Jim Overdorff and even Doug Whaley and the terrible job that they've done managing this cap situation, some of these ridiculous contracts that they have given people that really have put us in salary cap jail and has enabled us to not really do anything but
But that's not actually true. They're not in cap jail. They freed up a ton of money, and they had about average amount of space in the league for going into this free agency period.
Well, let me ask you this. Compare them to the New England Patriots, who just won a Super Bowl. Structure is like we're
But that's not cap jail. Every single team pretty much has the same situation, every one of them. Compared to if you're going to use New England as a baseline, I think that's a straw man argument because New England is the Super Bowl champions partly because their quarterback plays on a very minimal salary and cap hit, which he restructures all the time, and that helps them. And every single team, if you want to talk about cap jail, you're wrong. They're not. They had enough money this year. They had about 15th most amount of money of cap space heading into free agency because of moves they made.
Give me three top available free agents that they've been able to target, that they've had cap space to pursue. Zero.
You know,
what do you mean? I don't know. They signed Micah Hyde to a $5 million a year deal, which is a nice contract.
Agent.
Did you want them to sign?
I wanted them at least to have some interest and have the opportunity to maybe go after a Brandon Marshall or an Alshon Jeffrey.
Okay, but they did not have interest in those players because they have a philosophy of not paying those. It doesn't matter. Alshon Jeffrey was never going to come to the Bills. It had nothing to do with cap space, nothing at all.
What we've given Hughes, we've overpaid for these people. Look at the contract we've given LeSean McCoy. I mean, McCoy is the only one who's actually had production for the numbers that for the.
So is that a bad contract? He's the best running back in the league, possibly.
No, I said he's the only one who's actually been productive.
But you just said he overpaid for him.
It flopped. He's paid quite high. I mean, when there are actual running backs who have comparable production, that you can get much cheaper.
Okay, it doesn't matter what I say, obviously. You're convinced that every contract is horrible and they're in cap jail, and I'm telling you, you're wrong. I get it. There are people who are making more money. Marcell Dareus' contract is a hindrance right now for his production. No doubt, Jay. 100%, I agree with you about that. But if Marcell Dareus played the way he's supposed to, the contract is in line with what he should be making compared to the rest of the league.
I look at it like the teams that, and I keep saying this, the teams that, and I know we got to get to break, right?
Yeah, we do.
You want to go over this?
Let's do it. Yeah. And Ross Tucker's joining us. I'm sorry. I don't mean to cut you off. We're going to take a break because we are way up against the clock. I'll let Donald gather his thoughts. I'll let myself slow down a little bit. We'll take a timeout. Ross Tucker coming up on the other side on the John Murphy Show.
Radio Network Sports Update.
Taking a look around the sports world, sports update here on the John Murphy Show, WGR Sports Radio 550, and on MSG. The Bills can begin bringing players in the pre-draft process. Sources have told WGR Sports Radio 550 that they do have a visitor. His name is Nate Hairston, who came in yesterday, a cornerback out of Temple. The league now can have, each team in the league can have 30 prospects at their facility during the pre-draft process. So it looks like that process has begun for the Bills. I just said the word process a lot. I think that Sean McDermott's rubbing off on me. He says the word process so much. Sabres continue their West Coast swing tonight against the Los Angeles Kings. You can check that game out at 10:30 is when the puck drops. And, of course, we'll have the pregame for you on the radio side of things at 9:30 p.m. tonight. And we'll have the pregame on television on MSG at 10 p.m. The NCAA tournament is underway. It's going on right now downtown Buffalo, New York, at KeyBank Center. We got a whole set of games going on this afternoon and tonight and then tomorrow again. But, of course, today in Buffalo and then Saturday in Buffalo is when a couple of those winners will face off and tip off against each other. Our man from WGR Sports Radio 550, Brian Koziol, is down at KeyBank Center right now, where I understand, Brian, they've gone to the half with Notre Dame and Princeton. Fill us in on what's going on, man.
Hey, Sal, good afternoon. Yeah, great atmosphere down here. The first of four games today here at KeyBank Center. Notre Dame and Princeton is the first one to tip off, and it's 36-30 Notre Dame at halftime. The Irish with a six-point lead, and their best player, Bonzi Colson, having a pretty good half so far, dominating inside. He has 10 points to lead the Irish. And on the Princeton side of things, they're staying in it because of their three-point ball right now. Spencer Weiss has 11 points right now to lead the Tigers, and he's got a couple of threes in there as well. But Notre Dame's size and athleticism is probably maybe what will decide this. But right now, Princeton is hanging tough. It's a six-point advantage for Notre Dame. As we said, we are at the half so far. After this game concludes, it'll be West Virginia in Bucknell. That's the 4-13 matchup. And then later tonight, two more games here in Buffalo. You'll have the top seed overall in the entire tournament, Villanova, the defending national champion. They'll take on Mount St. Mary's. And then the 8-9 game is late, probably somewhere around 9:45 tonight. That's between Wisconsin and Virginia Tech. So if you've been here before, it's always great atmosphere. The bands are playing. The cheerleaders are in here. Governor Chris Christie from New Jersey is even sitting behind the Notre Dame bench right now. So I'm sure we'll see some more celebrities and dignitaries here along the way here, as this is always something that the nation pays attention to. But right now we're through a half of game one, Notre Dame 36 and Princeton 30. Sal, back to you.
All right, Brian, real quickly, I got to get out of here. We got a guest waiting on the line. Before I do, what is it as far as Notre Dame versus Princeton versus the second game and fans? Are we talking way more Notre Dame fans? I mean, we got a big Irish contingent here in Buffalo, of course, South Buffalo, a very big Irish community.
There's quite a bit of green and gold inside here today. There's no doubt about it. I mean, if I was going to put a percentage on it, I would say probably maybe two-thirds of the building in some sort of sense looks like they're cheering for the Irish. But there's also a lot of orange, and Princeton and Bucknell, of course, that's their main color. So as I look around here from kind of down near the floor area, there's quite a bit of people from both them. I mean, remember, Princeton, New Jersey, and Bucknell's in Pennsylvania. These aren't
too far
for these people to travel. And let's remember, for these two schools, this is a big deal to make the tournament. Now, Princeton has made it couple of other times recently, but for Bucknell, for them to get in here, this is a big event for them. The West Virginia student section behind the bench, pretty empty right now. I think they're waiting for game two to get a little closer before they start the ride.
And let's also remember, Brian, if you're a Bucknell fan, you can just wear a Buffalo on your hat, and it, you know, it's the same thing, right? They're the Bison.
That's right, the Bison, yes, that's right.
So you can just
do
that.
I can see that logo. It looks quite familiar with a lot of the Buffalo heads that we see on a lot of the Buffalo sports teams.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Brian, enjoy the rest of the games there. We'll check back in with you a little bit later, my man.
Okay, Sal, thanks.
All right, that is Brian Cozio down at KeyBank Center. So are you going? I'm going tonight. You're going tonight, right?
I'm going tonight, yeah.
It's going to be fun?
Yeah, it's going to be fun, man. The Villanova game and then that West Virginia. I meant that Wisconsin and
Virginia Tech
game should be a good game to watch. But, you know, Notre Dame and Princeton, two teams that are usually not known to be exciting games to watch. I like to see teams run. I like to see alley-oops and all types of stuff like that. You know, to those people that like to see the three ball.
Yeah, you know, here's the funny thing about college basketball. So I get into it with some of my media colleagues in a fun way. We go back and forth on this. I'm a huge college basketball fan.
Right.
Some people say, oh, my God, it's such bad basketball. You watch the games, and these guys, sometimes it's like they score 40-something points. Ah. You're like, how can you watch that? And I say, the beauty to me is actually in that, in the fact that they're not great all the time. Like, you never know when they're going to do something dumb or it's going to be a struggle for them. That's what I actually enjoy about college sports is they're kids and they make mistakes and you never know what's going
to
happen.
I like college basketball and, to be honest, college football over the NFL and the NBA, but especially with basketball. The NBA, I mean, there's just so much flopping and things going on in the NBA. I can't stand to watch it. The only time I really watch it is, like, playoff time, like, deep in the playoffs, though. You know, right now I'm not watching NBA basketball, but college basketball – I like to watch it. Everybody is—they're scrapping out there. There's so much school spirit out there. You know, it's fun
cool.
to watch.
I love the atmosphere.
Is just a lot better,
and that's why it's going to be fun tonight as well. It's fun going on right now downtown at KeyBank Center. We got Notre Dame, we got Princeton, and the man joining us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline right now is a Princeton alum. Now we did not, Donald and I said, we did not have the grades to go to an Ivy League school, but Ross Tucker apparently did because he went and he played football at Princeton, then he played with the Bills, and of course had an NFL career for several years, and now he's a motivational speaker. He's a member of the media. He does a lot of things out there, and he joins us right now on the line. The first question we have to ask you is how much of this interview will you actually pay attention to once the game starts again, Ross?
Not very much. I'll kind of tune you guys out and just answer however I want to answer, whatever I feel like talking about. But, no, not a bad first half. You know, when I was there, that was when we had some of our best teams. We were undefeated the 1 year and only lost North Carolina. And the 1 year we were a 4 seed in the tournament, which is crazy. So it's fun to watch them. I actually, on Saturday, saw Princeton play in the first ever Ivy League tournament. Guys, I had not watched them play in person since I graduated.
Wow.
So it was cool just listening to you guys talk. It was just cool to be there with the atmosphere, the band, the students, the cheerleaders. There's just a vibe and an aura in college sports that's truly unique and awesome.
Ross, when you were playing there, or when you were there and they were a 4 seed, it must have been like a 16-team field.
No, you know what? I mean, they legitimately only had one loss the whole year, and it was at North Carolina.
Yeah.
And that was a close game. They beat UNLV. They might have been a 5 seed. They beat UNLV in the first round, and then they played Michigan State with Mateen Cleaves, and they lost. They didn't even make it to the Sweet 16, but they at least got one win, which was nice. It's ironic. It's kind of one of the reasons why I went there. When I was a junior in high school getting recruited, they beat UCLA, the defending national champ.
That's right.
You know, that famous backdoor cut. And so my junior year, they won the Ivy League in football. They beat UCLA in basketball. I was like, all right, I'm going to Princeton. That's the athletic Ivy League. And, of course, I show up. We don't have one winning season, which stunk.
Of course, Pete Carril, one of the greatest college basketball coaches ever. I mean, he's just a legend, what he's done for college basketball, no doubt about that. Ross, I want to introduce myself. I'm Sal Capaccio. I'm filling in for Murph today. I know you know Murph. He's actually at the arena watching your team play today, your alma mater. So he's there today.
I love it. You want to hear something funny, Sal?
Yeah.
My wife actually went to Bucknell, and that's where we met because some of my high school buddies went there. So Princeton right now, Bucknell plays West Virginia right after that, so we should probably be there now, but my wife and I decided that if they both win, probably not real likely, but we're driving up to Buffalo and going to the game on Saturday and then I'll have to hit up all my different food spots, like
yes.
DePaulo's, Buffalo Chop House. I'll have five meals in a 12-hour period if we end up driving up to Buffalo.
Man, that's crazy. Now, I mean, Princeton is still in it. You know, it's 36-30 at halftime, so you guys have a chance to pull this out. And from what Brian was saying, right now they're on with the three ball. So the three ball is huge for Princeton.
Yeah, they were missing early, but they're doing better now from three. They've missed a couple of chip shots, and they just don't have some of the inside guys that Notre Dame has. But it's fun, man. It's cool that they're competitive. I think it'll be a close game. Notre Dame is not that much athletically superior that we can't hang with them like maybe some other schools that could be out there.
You know, Ross, I know, of course, we're going to talk about the Bills. I do have one other question for you, because you went to Princeton, I want to ask, because Donald, obviously, he's a motivational speaker as well because of what he's gone through in his career. I was a high school football coach for 10 years down in Florida as well, and we're very big into the process of becoming an athlete, and you have a different perspective. You went to an Ivy League school to play sports. We always hear about kids and scholarships. That's not a place you get a scholarship. So just for a lot of the listening audience, I know there's kids on spring break today that might be listening. What was that process like for you, and what did it take to be able to go to an Ivy League school to play football?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I never really thought much about it. And then my junior year, I was like going through a college football magazine and I saw the heights and weights and I knew I had pretty good grades and I ended up getting a pretty good SAT score, but it still wasn't, you know, the valedictorian of my high school did not get in, but I did because they wanted me for football and that certainly helps and just a truly unique opportunity. I was not a big time recruit. My scholarships were William and Mary in Delaware. So I thought, man, if I can go to Princeton or Harvard, I got to go. You know, nobody in my family ever did anything like that. I'm from Reading, Pennsylvania. So it was just an awesome, awesome opportunity. And to this day, it's a blessing. And I think about what all my college teammates, where they are now, it's unbelievable. I mean, all of them have good jobs. They're doing well. They're, you know, it's just you get a chance to go to a school like that, and it really sets you up forever. And I tell people all the time, it's not a 4-year decision, it's a 40-year decision. And so you go to school like that, doesn't mean the rest of your life's going to be on easy street, but man, you're getting a heck of a head start.
All right, so I guess we should get into some football, because I went to Youngstown State, you know, and you guys are talking Ivy
yes.
and stuff. You know, I'm sorry, I wasn't.
No, I got you, right?
No, but,
a little above our heads there.
Yeah,
go
let's
ahead.
Get into some football talk, though, and talk a little bit about the Bills. Last week, signed back Tyrod Taylor. What do you think of them bringing him back and the deal that they gave him?
Well, I'm a little surprised that they didn't just pick up the option to keep him under contract for 5 years, but they're not totally sold on him, and it seems like they got him for $10 million less over the next 2 years. They can even get out of it after a year if they want to. So, to me, it seems like an awesome contract for the Bills. I don't know why Tyrod Taylor took that, to be honest with you. I would think Cleveland or the Jets would have offered him more money than that, but he must have found out, you know, through the grapevine, so to speak, that that wasn't the case. You know, the way the Bills have treated him the last week of the season and some of the press releases and just, you know, this constant, are they going to re-sign him, are they not? Are they going to pick up the option? Are they going to do a contract? Now, I probably would have thought real hard about moving on if I were him, but evidently maybe the other options that were out there weren't as good as I would think that they would have been from teams like Cleveland and the Jets. But for the Bills, I think it's a heck of a deal to keep, you know, a guy I think is a top 20 quarterback in the NFL, you know, at a really a below market rate, $15 million a year. I mean, that's, you know, he's making less money than Mike Glennon. Are you
right.
kidding me?
That's yeah, I that's what I was about to say. I mean, you look at Mike Glennon, you definitely would have thought that Tyrod Taylor had a market out there and could have gotten at least what Mike Glennon was getting in Chicago.
Doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. Now, I don't know if anybody else is really willing to give Mike Glennon close that amount, or that was just a situation where the Bears really liked him. But, I mean, Tyrod Taylor is in a lot more than Mike Glennon has. I'm a little surprised he did that. You know, who knows? Maybe Tyrod feels comfortable in Buffalo with the line, with Sammy, and talking with the new coaches, and like Rick Dennison, and maybe he feels like he can really excel and getting out of his contract after 2 years, only doing a 2-year deal. Maybe he thinks he can get another really big deal mm-hmm. if he plays well the next year or two.
Former Buffalo Bill and current NFL media personality Ross Tucker joining us here on the John Murphy Show. Sal Capaccio, Donald Jones here. Ross on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Ross, you're very plugged in with the league. You talk to a lot of people. What is your feeling and your interpretation about the kind of coach the Bills have here in Sean McDermott?
Huge fan of Sean. I've interviewed him a couple times when he was with the Eagles. He's a Philly guy, which I'm from near there as well. He went to LaSalle College High School. He actually went to William & Mary. Speaking of William & Mary, very, very bright guy. It feels, when you talk with him, like he has been groomed for this his whole life. He has been ready for this. I think they nailed it. I was really happy that the Bills made that hire. I mean, obviously the proof is in the pudding, but, you know, he was part of really successful organizations in both Philadelphia and Carolina. He's gone to a couple Super Bowls with different teams, so he's seen different ways to do it but still have success. And I like some of the coaching staff hires they already made, which is always a good sign as well.
What about some of the free agents and the moves that they've made as an organization and him as the head coach?
I like DeMarco. I like Micah Hyde. So I like some of the guys they brought in. Still concerned about the wide receiver position for sure, as well as corner. I know that maybe they didn't want to pay Stephon Gilmore what he got, but you still need someone to play there. Mm-hmm. It's a bad league to be undermanned at wide receiver and corner, which they still are right now, which is why I expect them to draft heavily there in April.
We always talk about Corey Davis versus Mike Williams and this wide receiver class, Zay Jones. I'm a big Corey Davis guy. I know Donald is as well, but Mike Williams might fit the kind of, you know, matchup guy that they might want to. Have you gone into that a little bit and looked at these guys? Is there a guy that you like more than anybody else at that position if the Bills do go wide receiver?
You know, it depends on what you're looking for, obviously. You know, Mike Williams is kind of more of an Alshon Jeffrey, Brandon Marshall at the catch point, up in the air, you know, going up and getting the ball. And I would say Corey Davis is more like a Dez Bryant. I think probably most people listening are saying, okay, I'll take the Dez Bryant, thanks. They're both good players. They're just different players. I think that there's more upside, more potential for Corey Davis. I think he moves better than does Mike Williams, but I think the Bills probably be happy with either guy. I think both guys would be a pretty good compliment to Sammy Watkins on the other side.
One of the questions that we get is, should the Bills still draft a quarterback, even though they signed Tyrod Taylor? So what do you think about that?
Well, it all depends on how they feel about Cardell Jones. I don't think that they should draft one high unless they really, really like him, because you took Cardell Jones last year for a reason. You did sign Tyrod for two more years. If there's somebody they really like, then maybe. But, you know, if they do that, then they're pretty much already telling you what they think of Cardell Jones. And they're just kind of – that was a wasted pick last year then by Doug Whaley.
Ross Tucker here joining us on the John Murphy Show. Ross, did you fill out a bracket? I know Princeton's playing, but did you fill out a bracket this year?
You know, I didn't. I usually do, but I didn't this year. Nobody really approached me about doing it. And, you know, sometimes when you fill out a bracket – you're so caught up in wanting your bracket to be right that you don't really enjoy the game as much and just the upsets and how it works. Like, I never understand people that, you know, they pick the favorite, right? So they pick, like, a number three seed. And then they're, like, rooting hard for the three seed because they don't want the 14 seed to get the upset.
Right.
What's the logic there? Everybody took the three seed.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, unless you haven't gone to the Final Four, everybody's going to be in the same boat. Vote for the underdog. So I like rooting for the underdog.
Well,
in pretty much every game. I went to Princeton. Now I don't want the Youngstown State. Let's go underdogs.
Let's go
underdogs.
Wait, I went to Syracuse. I mean, we didn't even make it this year, all right? I'm depressed, so I'm having a tough time watching this thing. But upset alert, we already have one going on right now. Virginia is down to UNC Wilmington. So there you go. Just right off the hop there, Ross, we got an upset alert happening in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, that would be awesome. Only a two-point game, though, right now, so we'll see.
Yeah.
You know the deal is with these games.
Yeah.
The closer, the longer you can keep it close, the better, which is not good for Princeton. We're down eight now with 18 minutes left. So we're still, as long as it's less than 10, we got a chance. We're just not shooting as well. And for the first half, we shot like 35%. They were 47%. You're not going to win that way.
Hey,
yeah,
Ross.
We got to shoot better than them.
Hey, Ross, what is ballcannon.com all about?
Did you see the video yet, Sal?
I just went to the page. I have not watched the video. I just went to it.
It's the coolest thing ever. Check out the video definitely during the break.
Okay.
It's basically a jugs machine that is portable, lightweight, battery operated that you get for your kids or youth football league, flag football league. I bought one for my nephew who lives in D.C.,
And when I tell you that the entire neighborhood was at his house in 10 minutes, the entire neighborhood was at his house in 10 minutes. Well, just trust me when I tell you guys, watch the video, and then if you want one, I might be able to hook you up. It is, if you, I don't know if anybody's bought one in Buffalo yet. If you buy one of these things, I am guaranteeing that your kid will be the coolest kid in the neighborhood for at least a month. So think about what that's worth to you.
But you can't guarantee me he's going to go to an Ivy League school for an education, can you?
Well, I guess, I'll tell you what, he has a better chance if he's actually getting outside, being
that's
active,
right.
Rather
I agree.
Than just playing video games all day. So.
Now, listen, Ross, I got this. I have this philosophy. I have a 3-year-old son, and, you know, I think if he's anything like me, he'll be athletic and coordinated, but he won't be really big, which is me. So I have this plan. I'm going to make him a long snapper. Then he might actually have a chance to get a college scholarship. It is such a skill that no one actually has and works on out there.
Well, first of all, it doesn't sound like he'll be big enough to be a long snapper, but he can be a slot wide receiver. What you need to do, Sal, buy a ball cannon. I don't care if he's 3. As long as you're – I saw a 6-year-old making crazy catches off of it on Sunday. As long as he's 5, 6 years old – they can start catching 200 balls a day off this thing, and then he will be money by the time he starts playing football.
Ross, is it in the stores yet, or you can only get it online?
No, only ballcannon.com, and if you use the code Tucker50, you get 50 bucks off, but only the first person from Buffalo to call and use that code Tucker50, so you better do it quick.
Well, we're on TV right now. We're showing it. We're playing the video on TV. We're showing
it
for everybody.
Like
it looks really cool. It looks awesome. Definitely something Donald and I want to go use in the field house when we're done with this segment.
Absolutely. And get one for your son, Sal. In all sincerity, reach out to me. I can get you guys one probably.
All right, at Russ Tucker NFL on Twitter. He played in the NFL for 6 seasons, including here in Buffalo for a couple. Always a treat. Go watch your Princeton basketball team and have some fun with this tournament, man.
All right, take care, guys.
All right, thank you very much. That is Ross Tucker. That's pretty cool, actually, watching that thing, that ball cannon.
My son would love it.
I know he would.
He would love it. Like, I might have to get
Do you remember when you were younger and, like, who's playing automatic quarterback, right?
Yeah.
Because you have to divide up and you got an odd number of guys.
Now you
right?
have one.
So you got 9 guys show up to play a little football and you're like, well, somebody's got to play quarterback for both sides, the automatic quarterback.
The automatic
now
quarterback.
You've got an automatic quarterback.
I was always the guy like, come on, I want to score touchdowns, man.
I know.
I don't want to throw the ball. Like, I don't want to just be the guy that's standing there waiting for everybody to get open. I want to throw the ball. Now you get to the league and it's like the quarterbacks make all the money. I should have been the guy.
I know. if you're the automatic quarterback, you can kind of manipulate the results. Because you might have a buddy you're really cool with, and then the other buddy is like really likes your girlfriend and you don't want him to win.
Yeah.
So whenever you're playing for him, you throw interceptions.
Definitely.
And the other guy, you throw touchdowns. That's the way it works for automatic quarterback. By the way, my wife did text me during the show. She said sweetness is a nickname you have to earn around the house.
Oh, wow. Well, guess you got to earn it.
I said, I've earned it, haven't I?
It's been a long time. Earned that name?
I said, wait, it's been 14 years. I said, I earned it. You know what her response was? A bunch of crying emojis and laughing emojis. That's my wife. That's what she did to me.
Sheesh.
We'll take a time out. We'll come back. Sweetness with other
Tough
sweetness
crowd.
Here. Yep, that's right. Night train. Sweetness. Refrigerator. We got a nickname coming for you.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Well, we still have an upset alert going, but it's not quite as much of an upset alert because Virginia has taken a 1-point halftime lead over UNC Wilmington. But it's still a good game. A 5 versus 12. Almost every year, a 12 beats a 5 somewhere in the field.
That would just mess up every – and it happens every year. Like
that's right.
Said, it messes up everybody's bracket.
Do you have a bracket?
Round. I do have a bracket.
Who did you
pick
to
Virginia.
Win
Virginia. Oh, winning the whole thing?
Yeah.
Oh, I forgot. I think I took UCLA.
So did I.
Yeah.
I took UCLA. Only because I want to hear more about Lonzo's Ball's dad.
Man.
LeVar Ball.
Jesus.
he's
like
crazy.
Every day is something new. It's like, dude, come on. Your kids are good.
He's a little out there. But you know what? For us in this business, he's awesome because
he's
he gives us content.
Oh, yeah.
But, wow, that guy is
It's
he
the worst.
Is
like,
out
you're
there.
Just putting crazy pressure on your kids. I hope that they can come through. You know,
I know.
Right
Imagine
now,
if they don't.
To be honest with you, right now, Lonzo is the only one that you can see and say, like, man, this dude is special. The other two are good. They're good. Lonzo is special. So now he doesn't need his father to market him.
Right.
You know, his play on the court is what markets him. He can market himself. His father is marketing himself. You know.
I agree.
And it's like, dude, get out of the media. Like,
right.
If
Let
I was,
your son.
If I was Lonzo, you know, I'd just be like, come on, dad. And he said on the news, Like, I don't care. Like, they're not going to come to me and say anything. I raised you. I'm the one that paid. And it's like, come on, man. Like, it's terrible. It's a terrible situation. You see parents like this. You have a son. You've coached. You see parents like this all the time that just take it way too serious. They're trying to live vicariously through their kids' careers. This dude averaged 2.2 points a game when he played. His kids are good, and so he's living through them now.
If you don't know what we're talking about, which you may not, just go and search for LaVar Ball. That's his name, right? L-A-V-A-R-R. And some of the videos and things he said and the radio interviews he's given, and you'll understand a little bit more about what we're talking about. But it is – do you remember the old Cosby Show episode? You just reminded me of Bill Cosby when he said to Theo, he said, I brought you in this world. I'll take you out. That's what he's saying, basically. Hey, what are you going to say to me?
My mom
says
that to me.
I brought you in this world. I'll take you out, right?
I'm an adult with my own kids, and my mom still, I brought you in this world. I'll take you out.
That's right, and moms can, and they will. All right, so we've been doing this. Sal Capaccio here, Donald Jones. We've been doing this nickname challenge here, if you will, this tournament-style nickname challenge. So far, we have four of the Elite Eight. We got half the Elite Eight accounted for. We got Night Train, Beast Mode, Mean Joe Green, and Sweetness, okay?
Right.
Now, there are many nicknames I did not include. Someone said Samurai Mike. I didn't put him on there. Mike Singletary. Great nickname. But yes, I didn't. I just included 16 of some of the most notable or best nicknames in NFL history. He Hate Me did not count because that was really an XFL nickname.
That was the best, man.
It was
great.
He
was great.
It was his real name, not even a nickname. It was his real name, man.
He Hate Me.
He did sign. Play with the Carolina Panthers in the NFL. He did sign a contract, but they can't let him in the NFL or put He Hate Me on his jersey. So let's go to the next group. Let's go to the next two. The showdown here of nicknames. Here we go. This is a really tough one. Crazy Legs, Elroy Hirsch. Against the Mad Stork, Ted Hendricks of Raiders fame. Crazy Legs, Elroy Hirsch. Crazy Legs against the Mad Stork.
What is
a better football nickname?
I would have to go with Crazy Legs. For me, just because, I don't know, maybe because I play wide receiver and I like to score and dance and all of that stuff. So when I think Crazy Legs, and we're not talking about the person. We're just talking about the nickname.
He was a good player, but you're right.
Right. I think, like, you know, dancing in the end zone and doing crazy things with your legs. I don't know. For me, the Crazy Legs is just better than the Mad Stork.
I love it. Crazy Legs is a great nickname. Mm-hmm. Crazy Legs is a great nickname for anyone, no matter what you do.
Right.
Right? You could just be a guy who walks down the street and you say, there goes Crazy Legs. I'd be like, why do you call him Crazy Legs?
Yeah.
Did you ever see him walk? Right?
Yeah.
What if he's a football player? There goes Crazy Legs.
Yeah.
Why do you call him Crazy Legs? Do you ever see him run? Do you ever see him? It could be a compliment, or it could be an insult.
Bad. Yeah.
It could be a compliment because you jump over people and around people and you have crazy legs. Like, I could say LeSean McCoy has crazy legs.
Because he can cut on a dime. Like
no doubt about it. Or I could say that, I don't know, some really uncoordinated guy has crazy legs.
Right?
Right? I think it works both ways. Now, Mad Stork is not bad, though.
It's not bad. It's not bad at all. For me, though, just because of the position I played, I think more of scoring touchdowns, being able to cut on a dime and do crazy things with your legs, coming out of different breaks, and then dancing in the end zone. You know, so that's why I think Crazy Legs over the Mad Stork.
The Mad Stork, by the way, a linebacker who played for the Raiders, and the reason he was pretty much called that, he was tall and lanky, so, you know, like a stork.
Right.
What, 6'7"? Wow, I didn't realize that.
He could have got
Ted Hendricks, 6'7".
By the way, tall was already taken.
This is interesting. I just went to Ted Hendricks' Wikipedia page. Born in Guatemala City, Guatemala. How many NFL players have ever come out of there?
Maybe him.
Maybe just him, right?
Yeah.
All right, so we're gonna push Crazy Legs into the Elite Eight. What is next up on the list? Our last? No, not our last one. We got a couple more. Couple more here. All right. Ooh, Prime time. Deion Sanders, prime time against Lou the Toe Groza. The Toe,
you know,
is...
I mean, it's a funny one, the Toe.
It is funny.
It is a funny one. But prime time is just... This is entertainment. All right? So when you think football, you think entertainment, you think of fun scoring and dancing and all of that stuff. You think prime time TV, this is what you want to see. And, you know, you think Monday Night Football... Or Sunday Night Football, you know, those primetime games, the big games, Super Bowls and stuff like that. Primetime is just a better name for me.
Primetime's an awesome name.
It is.
Primetime was legendary when he was a little kid playing Pop Warner football because he played down in where I used to live. Mm-hmm. And I had moved there after he had played. But people told me, like, Sal, like, people would go and watch this kid play when he was 10 years old. He was so good, and no one could stop him. He was just the fastest kid on every team, and he was – and he didn't have the name Primetime yet, but his name was Deion Sanders, and he went to North Fort Myers High School, and he was down there playing, and literally when he was like 10 years old, he was considered a legendary status already down in that area where other guys like Sammy Watkins and Javon Kirst and those guys went. So he was, by the way, I still think he's one of the greatest corners to ever play the game.
I do.
Amazing.
Some people don't like him because he didn't like the tackle. Right.
Agreed. The same thing. He made business decisions,
he made business decisions. The same reason why people didn't like Stephon Gilmore, you know, because he wouldn't stick his head in there on every single tackle.
Okay, but if you gave me the skill set of Primetime with Stephon Gilmore on the ball, right, I could live with Stephon Gilmore making business decisions.
Exactly.
But the fact that Stephon Gilmore was not as talented and make all the interceptions, I can't live with that as much.
So with Primetime, it's okay.
It's okay. Right. He does not have to ever touch anybody.
Right. Like, listen, don't get hurt. We need you on punt returns. We need you to catch we pay you to catch interceptions and be able to lock down the best receivers.
I have a great Primetime story for you.
Okay.
All right. So somebody who coached in the league told me this story last year, actually. We were just kind of talking a little bit and told me this story. He said Primetime was in a game at Deion Sanders, and he was – people, you know, because he is a hot dog, people would always on the other side – you know, give him garbage and talk smack to him all the time and stuff like that. So he was sitting there back there for a punt waiting, and everybody on the other team's like, yeah, you know, you stink, whatever, talking smack to him. You don't ever want to get hurt. You're a whatever. You know, you can imagine how that goes, right? Primetime catches the punt, shakes a couple guys, goes about 70, 80 yards for a touchdown, high stepping into the end zone, turns around, walks back right past the bench, and he says, ain't so funny when the rabbit's got the gun, is it?
That's not going to happen in today's game.
That's right.
It's not going to happen in today's game.
Why not?
Because they're automatically going to throw a flag.
That's right. I know.
And you're going to get fined. You know, this is what we're talking about.
Ain't so funny when the rabbit's got the gun, huh?
Jeez. Like, this is entertainment. That's entertaining. Like, the fact that he told you that story, we sit up here and laugh. Even when you watch the game and you see him walk back past and he's looking at the coaches and all that stuff, it's entertaining.
It is. I love it. We should have mics on these guys and play it and let that should be live broadcast.
Man.
You know? Ain't so funny when the rabbit's got the gun. There you go. So Crazy Legs advances, and so does Primetime. Primetime. All right, real quick, let's get back into the Bills. We'll get to another round here in a second and talk about positions between last year and this year. Now, Donald, there were several rumors out there last week when free agency opened that the Bills were literally maybe interested, kicking the tires on Martellus Bennett. And even Jared Cook, I don't think he's signed anywhere yet, so you never know on that. Mm-hmm. Then there was some links to them, maybe even with O.J. Howard at number 10, which could be happening in the draft, the tight end who's obviously a super talent from Alabama. You might say, why? I mean, they got Charles Clay on a big deal. They're not getting rid of him. It would cost too much in the cap. Nick O'Leary's behind him. He's competent, but, you know, he's not going to be catching passes like Gronkowski for you. It seems like it's at least a position they're pretty stable in, is my point. But what do you think about them going big game hunting, it seems like, here at the tight end position?
I think they want to add another weapon for Tyrod Taylor in the system that they're going to run. Murph and I talked about this. They are going to run a zone scheme. Mm-hmm. And that zone scheme, if you look at what they did down in Carolina, if you look at – well, not even that. If you look at what Coach Dennison and Greg Kubiak and what they're known for doing when he was in Houston and then in Denver, they had a lot of two tight end sets. You know, and when you have a lot of two tight end sets, you'd like to have two good ones, two guys that can get down the field but also help you out in the run game. You know,
and can we say Charles Clay's a good player, by the way?
He is a good player. They haven't used him.
That's the problem. It hasn't been utilized.
Right. They have not used him
the way he should. But he's a good football player.
He's a good player. So when you have two guys that can get down the field for you, catch passes, and then you have two receivers outside that can get down the field and catch passes, you have crazy weapons for Tyrod Taylor to be able to throw the ball to. You know you're going to run a zone, but then it's going to be a lot of play action, throw the ball down the field. And so for me, I think they're looking at it like we need to have another weapon who can get down the field and be a reliable receiver catching the ball down the field, but also can help out in the passing game. So that's why I feel like you've seen the Martellus Bennett rumblings. You've seen the Jared Cook rumblings. and also the O.J. Howard. Now, at number 10 in the draft, I don't know if I would take O.J. Howard there. I'd rather see them – now, you got to know that he's going to be there. Trade back, pick up another pick, because you only have six picks right now anyway.
I'd love him to trade down, but
– yeah, trade down, but it's hard to do.
If we're sitting there Thursday night on the 27th, I believe it is, and you hear with the number 10 pick, the Buffalo Bills select tight end O.J. Howard of Alabama, what's your first reaction?
I mean, you know, you got to be satisfied with it, but I would say, man, they probably could have got him if they traded back.
Maybe. I agree, but I think mine would be, good player, tell me what you're doing now with the offense. Like,
right.
I want to know now, what is the vision for the offense? Because good player, I think anybody would say, like, I'll take that guy on my team. Where does he fit now? You have Charles Clay, you're paying a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
He can still do those things. What's my receiver situation? That's what I need to know.
And they might say, listen, we have Sammy Watkins, we have Charles Clay, we will have O.J. Howard if that was the pick. You know, Charles Clay, O.J. Howard, those are our number two, number three receivers.
Right.
You know, we can have another receiver.
Doesn't have to be WR attached there.
No, exactly. We can have
spot.
Another receiver. That doesn't mean that he's going to be the number two receiver.
That's
you know,
right.
As far as terms of, like, catching the ball and number of targets and stuff like that, those tight ends could be number two and number three along with Sammy Watkins.
We do have a poll about this. The reason why we're talking about it is at John Murphy Show on Twitter. The poll is, which Bills offensive position group has the best chance to improve from last year to 2017? And right now, running away with it is wide receiver at 50%,
yeah.
Which I guess is an indictment people think from last year, or maybe they're just thinking about the hope and possibility of a Corey Davis or a Mike Williams coming at number 10. But tight end is on the list, and right now it's only at 13%.
Mm-hmm.
I think if they get an O.J. Howard, if they get a Jared Cook, you could have tremendous improvement from the tight end position because of what you said. Not because of the talent upgrade, which would be there, Donald, but simply the use of the tight ends
right.
might be more than what you had.
You look at, I mean, tight ends, to have tight ends that can get down the field, it poses as matchup problems for
yes.
any defense. You know, it's hard to cover tight ends who can really run and catch the ball because they're so big, so strong, but then they're also fast and they can catch. And so it's hard to find people that can cover them. You have one, it's tough. When you have two, I mean, it's almost impossible. That's why it's been so hard to cover the Patriots tight ends when they have two of them, like when you have Gronk and Martellus
right.
Bennett, or Gronk and they had Aaron Hernandez
yep.
back in the day. It's hard to cover two tight ends in the middle of the field because safeties typically can't cover like that.
Right.
And corners are too small to get it done. That's why teams are now trying to bring in these corners that are 6'2", 6'3", with long arms so that they can move them inside to match up with those tight ends, but they're still not strong enough to be able to get that.
I think back. That's part of the reason Nickell Roby Coleman was let go.
Yeah.
I think, you know, he's a nice player,
mm-hmm.
but he can't match up in those situations. And
right.
I like having him against those smaller slot receivers that he can match up. And he actually did a good job when he was matched up against Decker in the slot a couple times or whatever. Yeah. But, man, we saw what happened when he faced big tight ends like Gronk and he's running down the field and he can't reach.
It's hard. It's hard to get that done. That's why you see a lot of these safeties now who are they're looking for safeties that can play down in the box
right.
but also can cover. You know,
right.
you need a guy who's more of a tweener, he can, like a hybrid that can do both.
I think that's what they're hoping Micah Hyde can be.
That's exactly what they're hoping Micah Hyde can be because you need to be able to cover tight ends. So if you're on the offensive side of the ball – and you have two guys that can get down the field, it just poses matchup problems for every team that you're going to face.
I'm glad you brought up matchup problems. I want to talk about the offense and the vision that I think it seems like at least Rick Dennison and Sean McDermott are building for the Bills because I think we can at least get some clues about the players they brought in and what they think the offense can be, which leads us to an interesting draft question coming up, and we'll talk about that next on the John Murphy Show. Also, Donald, he's got some more nicknames to get to. We got six of our Elite Eight. We got two more to go and put in there, and then we'll get down to the final four of our best NFL nicknames ever.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Back here on the John Murphy Show, Sal Capaccio, Donald Jones. Donald, it seems to me that the vision for this team is they're trying to create one-on-one mismatches in the offensive side. We just talked about this because, think about it. They get Patrick DeMarco, who can catch passes out of the backfield,
mm-hmm.
and I think that's something that they are trying to maybe try to get better at and be more athletic at. They go out and they get a guy like Mike Tolbert, who can be a goal line back and be a mismatch in that type of situation. There's rumors that they had offered a contract to Travis or Tarveris Cadet, however you say his name, mm-hmm. who's completely a huge third down weapon out of the backfield. And then these tight ends that we hear about that they could possibly be linked to. I think that the vision of the offense might be, we're going to try and outbig you. We're going to try and out, you know, muscle you if we can. So that gets me to what happens at number 10. And Andre Holmes. That's right. And Andre Holmes, if that's the case. So that gets me to what do you do at number 10 if you have Davis and Williams sitting there? We both love Davis, but wouldn't in that case the Mike Williams be more of that vision?
Yeah, if you look at it that way and you say, man, they're trying to really be bigger than other teams so that they can out-physical, out-match up everybody else. Yeah, I mean, that makes sense to go Mike Williams. I mean, he ran something today. You hear different numbers, but he was in the 4-5 range. So I guess it's fast enough for his size. He's a big physical receiver who likes to box out. He can jump over you and catch a lot of passes. So, yeah, that would make sense if that's the thought process of the team. For me, when you talk about matchups, I like a guy who can run routes.
Right.
I really do. I think that's a matchup problem for DBs. If you have a guy like Sammy who's a matchup problem going down the field, you need someone else who can run routes, especially if you have a tight end like Charles Clay who can get down the field. He poses as a matchup problem if you use him the right way.
That's right.
If you get another tight end or if you have a guy like Logan Thomas actually emerge and be a guy who can play, you know, he can pose as another matchup problem. You have LeSean. You have the fullback who can catch passes out of the backfield. That's a lot of different weapons. If all of those guys are healthy, you have a lot of matchup problems. So for me, I think you need a guy who can actually run the entire route tree.
We're showing on our screen, if you're watching on the TV side of things, the Mike Williams Pro Day 40 right now. He's
I mean,
a physical
like a,
specimen. I know more on this. Milton in Buffalo has a question about these two wide receivers. So go ahead, Milton. What's up, man?
Yeah, I want to know if they're comparable to like a A.J. Green or Julio Jones. And I got a second question. What happened to the fullback that we had last year?
Jerome Felton is a free agent, and it appears as though they're not going to bring him back, so he was on an expiring contract. Does that make sense for you?
Yeah, it does.
Okay, let me get into the Williams and Davis thing again. I don't know if I can find comps. Ross Tucker compared to Williams to more like an Alshon. I wouldn't say that. He's not that big. But like a Brandon Marshall, maybe. Yeah. I mean, he's not – I don't have to look at his exact size, but that would probably be better.
Brandon Marshall? Yeah, that makes sense.
I mean, Corey Davis, I'm not – I hate doing this. I hate doing it. But literally, I want to say he does kind of have some qualities of an Antonio Brown.
Yeah.
Corey Davis. Yeah. Because he's a great route runner and he can get separation. Mm-hmm. But his real big asset is running after the catch.
Running after the catch.
Love
so
it.
I look at an Antonio Brown or like Jarvis Landry down in Miami. Mm-hmm. He likes to run after the catch. He's like a running back after the catch. He said Julio Jones. Mike Williams, to me, does not compare to Julio. Julio's faster than Mike Williams.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Julio, now he's now learned a lot about route running in this league. He can run the entire route tree. When he first came out, though, he was a guy who was like, man, you can throw it up to him and he'll catch it over anybody, but he can run past you as well. Like, he was that fast coming out of college. So, you know, Mike Williams, it makes sense to compare him to a guy like Brandon Marshall. Brandon Marshall was never really the fastest wide receiver. He was just bigger. He knew how to make catches in the air. He knew how to position his body, box you out, and make those catches. But he's not a guy who is going to run past you, and that's how I look at Mike Williams.
Brandon Marshall listed at 6'4", 230. Mike Williams, 6'3", slightly over 200. So a little bit smaller. Yeah,
a little smaller.
I think Brandon's a little bit bigger, but I guess style of play that he would be like that. But I'm a big, as you know, Corey Davis guy. We'll see. All right, real quick, we're going to do a couple more nicknames here. We'll get to our final two of our Elite Eight. We already have Night Train, Beast Mode, Mean Joe Green, Sweetness, Crazy Legs, Prime Time. And let's go with the next group on the screen. Let's bring them up. Here we go. Ooh, two good ones. The Assassin, Jack Tatum, against the Snake. No, not Jake Plummer. The Snake, the real Snake, Kenny Stabler. Kenny Stabler, the Snake against the Assassin. What is the better football nickname?
For me, I have to go with the Assassin. I like the Assassin. First of all, I like movies that have assassins in them. So I have to go with the Assassin because, you know, the assassin, an assassin is someone who can, you know, find a person and do whatever it is that they want to do
That's
to
right.
that person. So I look at an assassin like, you know, he can find the right spot on the field and do whatever it is that he wants to do. That person typically, an assassin in a movie is typically like more human than other people. I would say. And so I have to go with that.
I got you. The Assassin. I like the Assassin. I would probably go. I like the Snake, but the Assassin's a really good nickname. And then finally, our last grouping of the round of 16 to get into the Elite Eight, the Galloping Ghost, Red Grange, versus the Throwin' Samoan, Jack Thompson.
That's a tough one. That is a tough one. Galloping Ghost.
Red Grange, in case you don't know, right. I mean, the NFL, in case people don't know listening out there, the NFL really never became the popular league it is and started to actually gain momentum until Red Grange actually joined, and he was a huge part of that, and he was such a good player, but he earned the nickname the Galloping Ghost, but it really, he was a very, very big part of the popularity of the NFL and the sport of football, actually, when he played. The Throwin' Samoan? I mean, come on. He's from Samoa. He's American Samoa? Jack Thompson?
Sheesh. I'm not sure where to go on this one. I might have to go with the Throwin' Samoan on that one. I think, you know, obviously it's a quarterback, and
it's, you want to laugh because it's funny, right? It's a great name. It rhymes. It's hilarious. Yeah, it's great.
I think I have to go with that one, the Throwin' Samoan. The Galloping Ghost is a great nickname.
It is. I know.
But it's like when you think football, the Galloping Ghost, I mean, that can kind of go with anything.
Mm-hmm.
Throwin' Samoan, you kind of know. Somebody's throwing the ball, whether it's football, baseball, or something. Somebody's throwing something.
That's right. He played at Washington State, played for the Bengals for a few years, and went on with the Buccaneers. Doesn't look like he had too good of a career, Jack Thompson, but he did have an awesome nickname. So we got the Assassin and the Throwin' Samoan. Our Elite Eight is set. We'll have more on that when we come back. 1 hour left of the program. Sal Capaccio, Donald Jones filling in for John Murphy today on WGR and MSG.
Radio Network Sports Update.
Well, we're going to get to what's going on downtown at the NCAA tournament at KeyBank Center in just a little while. But let's take a look at your sports headlines right now. The Bills can begin the pre-draft process of inviting prospects at One Bills Drive. WGR Sports Radio 550 sources have told us that that process has begun with the visit by Temple cornerback Nate Hairston. So the Bills and all other teams are allowed 30 pre-draft visits. And again, it looks like one of them is already in the books, so we'll keep you updated on any others that come about as well as far as the pre-draft visitors for the Bills are concerned. Sabres continue their West Coast swing tonight at the Los Angeles Kings. The puck drops at 10:30. The team has recalled defenseman Taylor Fadun from Rochester. He'll join the team for the game tonight. And again, like I said, tonight at 10:30 is the puck dropping down in Los Angeles or out west in Los Angeles. You can get that pregame coverage at 9:30 tonight on the radio on WGR and at 10 o'clock on the TV side of MSG. The NCAA tournament is underway. They are playing in downtown Buffalo right now. And let me just check. I will give you the exact scores of games as we have here going on right now. We got UNC Wilmington leading still Virginia in the second half, Donald, 45-44. How about that?
Still mess up my bracket.
Really?
Just gonna throw it off right there. I can just count out the whole Warren Buffett billion-dollar thing.
Only if they wind up winning and actually get the upset going, right?
I bet you that will mess up everybody in this.
Early on, we have Gonzaga down also to South Dakota State. That one's early, 8-6 in that one. We're going to get to our Notre Dame-Princeton game here in a minute because I want to bring Brian Colzio in. Butler is beating Winthrop 34-20 early in their contest as well. Do we have Ryan ready to go? Rock and roll down on the line there, down at KeyBank Center. We'll do that. Brian Colzio from WGR Sports Radio 550. I saved the Princeton-Notre Dame score so Brian could tell us what's going on down there live at KeyBank Center. So what is happening right now down there, Brian?
Sal, we got some good drama here. We just went under 2 minutes to go, 156 officially, stoppage and play, and Notre Dame is only up three. They've had bigger leads throughout the half, but this is about as tight as it's gotten here. It's 57-54. Bonzi Colson and Matt Farrell have been outstanding for Notre Dame. They have 16 each, but Spencer Weiss, a senior for Princeton, has been running the floor all day, handling the ball. He's got 15 for the Tigers. And anybody in here that's of neutral rooting status, you can hear kind of feel like they're getting behind the Tigers right now to maybe pull off what would be the big upset to start the tournament here in this 5-12 matchup. So right now, it's Princeton's ball, down three with 156 to go.
Wow, it looked like Princeton was Notre Dame was going to run away with it for a little while there. How did Princeton get back into this thing, Brian?
Well, Notre Dame just went cold shooting, and they had to sub out Bonzi Colson, who's been dominating inside. Mike Bray did, the head coach of Notre Dame, just to get him a little breather here. Princeton took advantage of that, but like I said, Spencer Weiss has been phenomenal for Princeton, just making the right pass at the right time, setting up his teammates. And for playing a guard, he's also gone down low and posted up a few times for layups. So he's been tremendous here. We know last time the tournament started, we had the big upset of Dayton over Ohio State. And now Princeton has their chance to maybe do it here. With just 1:29 to go, it's still just a three-point game right now. Notre Dame has the ball now on the inbound.
If Notre Dame loses, it's going to be a sad St.
Yeah,
Patrick's Day.
Yeah, if Notre Dame loses, all those Irish fans are going to be gone from the Buffalo area in St. Patty's Day. They're not going to stick around, man.
You're right. And they're filling up the whole building here right now. But you can tell it's getting late here and dramatic because most of the lower bowl is standing up now here as we go possession by possession. And clock's running and, you know, we're closing in on a minute here to go.
Hey, real quickly, Brian, next game, Bucknell against West Virginia. Are you getting a sense of how the crowd is comparably for those two teams?
Crowd is filled in. There is quite a bit from Bucknell here. The area behind the West Virginia bench, I would say, still is the most emptier sections of a lower bowl. I mean, it's not empty, but I'd say, you know, maybe you could say a dozen or so empty seats. But I look behind me in the Bucknell section, it's packed from top to bottom. So they're ready to go for their team in that 4-13 game. And, of course, whoever wins this one between Notre Dame and Princeton will face the winner of that West Virginia-Bucknell game. By the way, Bonzi Colson is on the line for Notre Dame and is up one right now. He just made a basket, so they're up now 58-54 with a minute 10 to go.
All right, we'll keep you updated. Thank you very much, Brian. Thanks for checking in with us today.
Okay, thanks, guys.
All right, no problem about that. And then Virginia is only up by three on UNC Wilmington right now. That game with 11:41 left here in the second half. So interesting. Games all ready to start
already.
The tournament. I like
but
it.
But, you know, in my bracket, I have Virginia winning, and obviously I took Notre Dame. So, you know, I need these teams to pull it through.
You know, I took Notre Dame, too. I'm partial to the ACC schools because of Syracuse, so I kind of lean that way when I have a decision to make. But, come on, it's Notre Dame and Princeton. I'm not going to think Princeton's going to win a tournament game against Notre Dame. That would be a true upset.
That would
be 12-5 is always
a great
upset.
Yeah, it's definitely a true upset. But, sheesh, come on, Notre Dame.
This is I know, and I have a feeling. It just seems to me like Mike Bray teams have never done great in the tournament. Like, they're good regular season teams.
Yes.
I always get a feeling.
Yes, they always do that.
Somebody could point out, no, you're wrong. They're always, I always feel like Mike Bray teams don't succeed in the tournament.
I'm telling you, man. Notre Dame, every year, they're good in the regular season,
right.
But then they get
or
into
even
the tournament.
Even in the ACC tournament.
Right. But then they get in the tournament, and it's like a total different ballgame. I don't know what's going on there.
I agree with you, though, what you said about tomorrow, St. Paddy's Day in Buffalo, with the Irish in town.
Yeah.
Woo!
It'd be crazy downtown.
Hide the women and children, baby. It's going to be fun. They're going to be having a good time. In fact, the women and children might be a part of the parade and the festivities.
Yeah.
It'll be fun. But seriously, I'm looking forward to that. I mean, I'm not saying that I want to see an upset. That'd be cool, too. But the economy needs the Fighting Irish in town for St. Patrick's
now,
Day.
Now, they don't close down school, right, for St. Patrick's Day?
No.
How many people are going to take off of school and work
if
the Irish is still here?
Now, the parade isn't until it's like Sunday, I think, though.
Oh, okay.
So,
gotcha.
But it's still St. Patty's Day, and if they win, they play Saturday, so they have a whole day to.
Is it a big parade here in Buffalo, St. Patty's Day?
Huge.
Really? See, I've never been here around this time of the year.
Huge.
So. Wow.
We have a huge Irish population here, especially in South Buffalo.
Wow.
It's really, really big. The parade is very big. A few years ago, it was like 70 degrees.
Oh, wow.
Like that year that Mario Williams signed.
Sheesh, yeah.
Right? And now it's what it is now. So you never know what kind of weather you're going to get.
70 degrees on St. Patrick's
Day.
Yeah,
it was crazy.
I'm sure it was a lot of drinking going on.
Yeah, I think there was a little bit, Donald.
Now you're drinking to stay warm.
That's right. 59-56, Notre Dame up. 20 seconds left. Ooh, we'll keep you updated on
ball?
That
Can
game.
You see that?
Princeton has taken a full timeout, so I'm guessing they have the ball, but I'm not sure.
Uh-oh, and they have three-point shooters.
They do. So, but I don't know if they have the ball, but they took a timeout, so we'll keep you updated there. Donald Jones with me, Sal Capaccio. Let's take a phone call, and we'll let that game play out, and we'll keep you updated as that game winds down here. Mark in New Jersey. What do you think, Mark? What's going on?
How you doing, Sal? How you doing, Donald?
What's up?
I hate to beat the dead horse to death with O.J. Howard, but I think you know, Sal, that they were going to take Eric Ebron.
Yes, they were.
Walking straight. Am I correct in saying that?
They were, yep.
And that was before they got Charles Clay and Clay's knee and stuff. And he's kind of like the Swiss Army knife type, the tight end. He can detach, move around, and you have O.J. Howard who kind of kills two birds with one stone. Big receiver, insurance, a tight end. They can kind of like mismatch him. And I don't like Mike Williams for reasons other than you guys, because they just released Aaron Williams from a neck injury. And Mike Williams had he missed a whole year with a broken neck last year, if I'm correct. And Corey Davis, you know, the kind of competition level scares me, and he's coming off surgery. And they drafted a guy who ended up needing surgery last year. So teams tend to, I don't know, they kind of like don't. And then doubling down in a receiver in the top 10 after you just did it a few years ago, and it's deep, like you said. So
what would you like to see?
O.J. Howard?
O.J. Howard, yeah, because I think he's – I want the Bills to have that guy. I told your screener, I'm tired of Derek Fine, Derek Schuman, and those type of tight ends for the Bills. I want a guy who's like, oh, look at our big tight end on their corner. He's going to have a problem.
I hear you. Look, here's the thing about it. I'll say, though, they can use Charles Clay like that, but – he just hasn't been.
They have. Now, we all know that this is a system-based league, all right? Like, you have some players that are very versatile, and you've heard Coach McDermott say, I want to have versatile guys that can play everywhere. But we all know that you draft guys that fit into your system, right? And so you look at a team, and I hate doing this because everybody does this, but you look at the Patriots, right? They don't have a legit receiver now with Brandon Cooks yet. But before Brandon Cooks, and you take aside Randy Moss, Edelman and Amendola and Chris Hogan, none of those guys will go to another team and be a number one receiver.
Correct.
They are straight system receivers. Like, I don't even know if they would fit on another team in this league, right? Just because of – they just fit in that system. So in this system, in this scheme that they're going to run on offense, if they feel like these tight ends are going to be huge, we're going to get the ball to the tight ends and they're going to be our number two and number three receivers behind Sammy Watkins – that's who you're going to end up drafting. That's going to tell you what they want to do on offense.
I agree 100% what you just said. And, Mark, what if Corey Davis was there? Would you do that?
No, because he's coming off surgery. And it's not serious surgery. And the competition level is kind of like it's a little suspect. He looks great running past those guys.
I think he had a couple games where he played other teams. Didn't he play Wisconsin or Washington?
Yeah.
And he looked pretty good. And look, I always remind myself, too, Antonio Brown played in the MAC.
You know, I have nothing against him, but I'd prefer O.J. Howard.
I understand.
I think Tyrod would be more comfortable seeing that guy in the red zone than he would 6'2 or 6'3.
All right. Thanks a lot, man. Appreciate it. Like, it's a tough call. Again, and I'll say, I would not discount a guy like Zay Jones in the second round. I mean, you don't have to go wide receiver in the first.
Don't.
If you can get, there's good wide, Chris Godwin at Penn State. There's some good wide
some
receivers
good wide
in this draft.
Receivers, it is. And you're going to find those guys in the second round.
That's
you
right.
Know? And
you can
so
find some.
You don't have to go receiver in the first round and say, just be like, even if you draft one in the first round, it doesn't mean they're going to be good, right? So none of these players, you don't know what they're going to do coming out of college. So I look at the receiver pool and you see the top two, Mike Williams, Corey Davis, yeah, he had the surgery. Mike Williams has had the neck issues. I wouldn't be upset if they decided to go with someone else in the first round. Not
right.
saying it's O.J. Howard or not saying it's going to be one of these safeties or corners in the first round. But in the second round, I do feel like you can find a very good receiver who can possibly be a starter for years to come on your team.
I don't know this, but I feel like something happened in the basketball game because in the other room here, I heard people yelling.
I heard people yelling
in the production room. I can actually hear
happened.
That. Did something happen? Can someone tell me?
Can we
update everybody? Because it still says on my app here I'm watching. Because I don't have the game on in here. We can't. We're actually concentrating on our jobs.
Right.
Unlike some of you out there, like Ross Tucker, who comes on this radio station is
paying attention
to a basketball
to
game. It's 59-56 still, I see. I don't know.
Nobody said anything?
Oh, 59-58 now. They did get a two.
They must have got fouled.
And then Notre Dame took a timeout, so it must be a foul. So we'll keep you updated. 1-point game
Uh-oh.
There down at KeyBank Center.
What time is left?
12 seconds. There's still time. Did you see this new?
I hope the games tonight are like this.
I know. Did you see the new experimental rule that they're using in the NIT this year?
No.
So I hate it. I hate it. So, you know, in basketball, fouls are there's two halves of 20 minutes. Seven teams team fouls, you go 1-1. 10 team fouls, you go 2 shots. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now in the NIT, what they're doing is a new rule. They're experimenting with it, and they could implement this down the road in college basketball. There's still 2 20-minute halves, but at the 10-minute mark of each half, the fouls reset, and there's no more 1-1. There's no more 1-1. Once you get to 4 team fouls in each 10-minute segment, you get two shots. That's it.
What?
So in the first 10 minutes, 4 shots, 4 fouls, 2 shots, right? Once you get to 10 minutes, you reset. Now it takes another 4, and you get two shots, and the one and one is gone. And I don't
like
it. I hate it.
That's terrible. That changes like fundamentals of basketball, and it's going to change strategy at the end of games. You know, like now it's going to be two shots. If you decide you want to foul, it's going to be two shots automatic instead of going the old way with, you know, you
have more pressure one and one.
Right.
You got to make the pressure.
One. I don't know. That's terrible. Some of these rules that they come up with is like, who wrote this? Who came up with this? Well, didn't you actually agree to it?
Well, I'm being told the women already changed this. They're different. The women play quarters. There's a difference there.
Yes,
though.
They do.
The women play quarters.
Yeah.
So it's a little different. They're actually going to reset
still
it.
Yelling in the other
They're going to reset it at the 10-minute mark of a half, which is kind of odd. Like, all of a sudden you got four fouls. A guy's dribbling down the court. The clock goes from 10 to 9:59. Oh, now you only have zero fouls. What?
Nah, I don't know, man. That's I don't like it.
All right. We'll find out what happens here. 803-0550, 888-550-2550. You talked about the draft and where they could go and things like that. I'll tell you one thing that's happened lately for me. I've been a big guy about Malik Hooker or Jamal Adams at safety, maybe at 10. I don't think I'm there anymore after they signed Micah Hyde and even to a lesser extent, Jordan Poyer.
Right.
It seems to me that would be not as much high on the priority list as far as the pick at 10 after the moves they've made in free agency.
That makes sense. That makes sense. I would think it would have to be corner if you feel like you need a real upgrade at corner, or the offensive side of the ball, and you go – or linebacker. You could go with one of those weak side linebackers. I don't know who they're talking about up that high aside from Foster.
Right. But you're right. Linebacker's still a need on this team.
Linebacker's still a need. Right tackle still a need. I just don't think they're going to go to that position at number 10. So you would think – corner, wide receiver, tight end. It would be one of those three, right? Those make the most sense, at least. We don't know the philosophy of Coach McDermott. You know what Doug likes to do, but Coach McDermott, you don't know his philosophy. You know how you have some teams that like to draft the best player on the board. You have other teams that like to take for need, you know, and we don't know that philosophy. But for me,
the Bills are generally a best player available, but then they'll attach the, you know, they would rather have it in a need spot if they can, but they'll take the best player available.
The best player available. But I think when you look at it, it makes the most sense to bring in a corner, a wide receiver, or a tight end.
Would you think about right tackle? If there was a guy, like, I don't know, Ramchek from Wisconsin, let's say, who could be, you know, up there. Like, if there was a guy who you really liked, would you take him at 10?
I think you need to shore up the right side of your line.
Right.
And they've brought in Andre Smith. You know, they signed Jordan Mills back, but, you know, it shows that they're looking at the right tackle position. And so they need to make sure that they shore up the right tackle. And so, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they went to the right tackle position in the first round of the draft. Because you do. I mean, you have a guy who can get out of trouble, but that doesn't mean that you don't shore up your line. That's what's wrong in Seattle for years. I mean, Seattle – they just let their offensive line go. They put so much money in the defense. They paid Russell Wilson, the receivers. They usually have a decent running back. But their line, just like Russell Wilson can get out of trouble.
It hurt him last year. And he got hurt last year. We do have a final from downtown Buffalo. Princeton went for a three-point shot late. They miss it with 2 seconds left.
Man.
Notre Dame wins by two.
It's a good game, though. It's going to be a good St. Patrick's Day in Buffalo.
That's right, I know. Bar owners throughout Buffalo are very happy about this result.
Yes.
St. Patty's Day with the Irish in town. Let's head out to the phone lines. Let's go to Adam in West Seneca. Hi, Adam. You're on WGR and MSG. What's up?
Yeah, hi. I was just thinking about the draft and, you know, who we think we should get. I think we need to trade back from that 10 spot. And I was listening to Steve Smith talk, and he said I really liked Cooper Kupp from Washington State. So, I mean, there's a lot of options. I like Zay Jones, too. But, I mean, I think they should trade back and definitely go with corner or safety in the first and then address the receiver in the second round. I also agree that we need tackle. We need offensive line help.
Well, I mean, that's a lot. And I was just thinking about that. Thanks for the call, Adam, that really, you could kind of make a case for a lot of different positions at 10, which is why I agree that maybe trading back is the best idea.
You trade back, and there's still going to be like good players if you trade back. If you trade back, we're not talking about you're going to trade back into the 20s. You probably only go back, you know, three or four spots or something like that to a team that's willing to trade up a couple of spots. Because if you have a team way back in the 20s that wants to trade all the way up to 10, they're going to have to give you a lot for you to trade all the way back that far. And no team is going to do that. So you're talking about moving back a couple of spots, and it would make sense. If you can pick up one more pick, you only have six. If you can pick up one more pick, and you preferably will want a fourth-round pick. I don't know what team is going to be willing to give up a fourth-round pick, especially when you can find starters on the defense side of the defensive side of the ball, like everybody's talking about at corner safety. I don't know if a team's willing to give up a fourth-round pick. The Bills don't have a fourth-round pick, so they need to pick up a fourth-round pick.
Yeah, they do have an extra fifth this year,
right,
because of the Matt Cassel trade, but they also mm-hmm. got rid of their seventh in that trade.
Right.
So they have an extra fifth. They don't have a seventh. They don't have a fourth because of the trade they made with the Bears last year. They jumped up to get Reggie Ragland. Yeah, what do you get for a 10? I mean, you move down. It depends how far you go.
Right.
You know, if you go – and let me ask you this. So let's put it out there. Let's put it to a poll question. Actually, you know what? I got a poll question idea.
Okay.
All right, I'm sure these guys – I'm sure J.J. And Jay Harris in the other room can do this for us. Here's the poll question I want to pose that we'll put it up there. Have we ever done a poll question in the last half hour of the show just for like 30 minutes to see how it turns out? Because we could do that right now. I want to do it. Here's the poll question I want to put up, okay?
All right.
If the Bills trade back from number 10, what's the lowest you're willing to go down?
Great question.
Right? Yeah. Because I think that – right. I mean, people can say, well, tell me what we're getting. No. Because here's how it works. This is what Doug Wheelie and his staff will tell you they do all the time. They have a board and they have a list and they say, we will trade, but there's only a certain spot we're willing to go because the value doesn't match anymore.
Right.
So I don't know what his value is for that this year, but I would say I personally wouldn't want them to trade out of like the top 20.
No.
Would you want to trade out of the top 15?
I don't think I want them to get past the top 15.
See, that's the thing. So you're talking 10 to 15. How much can you really get if you go 10 to 12, 10 to 13, right?
Right. I mean, you're talking about probably getting, you know, fourth rounder back.
Right.
Picking up an extra pick.
If you go down to 20.
If you go down to 20, you're talking
second rounder, maybe third.
Right. That's a lot of picks you're trading back.
That's right.
So you need to be able to get something earlier in the draft to compensate for trading back that many picks. Because if you trade from 10 to back to 20 or back in the 20s, the player that you like might not be there. You're taking a real gamble that guy might not be there. And so
let me ask you this. I'll pose another question on this when we come back. I want to do a poll question. Let's do the poll question. If the Bills were to trade down from the number 10 spot, how far down would you be willing to go? And then when we come back, I have a really interesting scenario that could happen, and I'll ask you about that here on the John Murphy Show. Sal Capaccio with Donald Jones coming back at you next.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
I think we finally got this Twitter poll question, or at least tweet.
Right.
Finally.
You know what happens sometimes.
I love our crew. I do love our crew. Here we go. As proposed by yours truly, that's what it says in the John Murphy Show tweet, Sal Sports. Here's the question. If the Bills trade back in the draft, what is the lowest spot you'd be willing to go? Everybody's tweeting in, 11 to 13. No, give me a number. Like, tell me the number. Don't tell me a range. The whole point is give me a number.
Give me a number. I'm not willing to go past 15. I think you go back to 13. I think you can go from 10 to 13. You can pick up anywhere from a fourth round or back, and you can find some good players at that point in this draft. So I'm good with that. Don't go past 13.
Wow, so you're not going down far. You're gonna get, so if you do that, that's fine. You're gonna pick up an extra pick. It'll be a fourth.
And
it'll be
see,
a fifth.
When you hear about what they're saying about this draft and the depth, especially on the defensive side of the ball, you can probably still find a starter or a good player for your team at that point in the draft. You know, I think if you go past 15, you're gonna lose out on a player that you might want to have.
Good, lots of good tweets rolling in on this. At Sal Sports, at John Murphy Show, at DA Jones 19. This one says, wherever you can get Jabril Peppers. And I like that response because not the player, but that's the point. What teams do is they say, here's our list of guys where we have a drop-off after this. Yeah. Here, just so people know, generally, I could tell you this. I've spoken with a lot of personnel people over the mm-hmm. years, Donald, and they all say the same thing. Hardly ever do you actually have, almost never, 32 guys you have first-round grades on.
Right.
You never have 32 first-round grades. So how many guys do you have a first-round grade on? Let's say it's 21.
Mm-hmm.
That's the spot you'd be willing to move down to then.
Gotcha.
Because you don't want to move down out of first round to not get first-round value. If you have 21 players graded as first-round talent, if you're going to trade down, you want to make sure you still get a first-round talent. That's the whole point. So you would probably be willing to go down to just that spot. That's generally how they think.
So what you're saying is Draft Day the movie was totally false. No, I'm just playing.
Yeah, probably. But here's the scenario I was teasing you about earlier that I want to tease, not teasing you about. I was teasing. I want to throw you at you. You're sitting there at – can we put the draft board back on the screen, please, so I can see the actual draft order here? You're sitting there – thank you, guys – at 10, all right? Mm-hmm. Suddenly, the – I don't know. Let's see who it is. The Seahawks call, all right? No, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. A team above you. Say the Chargers. The Chargers call.
And
okay?
They want to trade back.
No, they've already made their seventh pick.
Okay.
Chargers have made their seventh pick. You're at 10. They call and they say, guys – We know we've already selected. We really want a player at 10. We will give you our first rounder next year. And, like, you know, a fourth this year or whatever to jump out of here. So you're going to go down. You're going to select, instead of 32, you're going to select not, you're going to have two, I mean, you're going to move down,
mm-hmm.
right? So you would obviously go up, they would give up their next pick, which would be seventh in the second round.
Right.
And then you're going to have you're going to pick seventh and 10th in the second round, and you have a first round pick next year. You would have no first round pick this year.
Right.
You'd pick two early second round picks.
Early second round picks.
And then an extra first next year. Would you do it?
Mm. Man. You know, I wouldn't have a problem with having two second round picks. I think there's talent in this draft.
Right.
And to be honest with you, first round picks to me, I mean, how many of them don't pan out? Now you can find one and they end up being great players. But it wouldn't bother me if they decided they can get that much for trading out of the first round.
If they
and going
the
second,
would you be okay?
Second round pick.
The essential question is: would you be okay with trading out of the first round completely, therefore having two good second round picks and an extra first next year?
I would be okay with that.
Okay,
because that's how you build a roster. You're talking about building a roster of and building from your foundation, building out. That's how you bring talent on to a team, and you can win doing things like that. You can win for years to come.
I think it's an interesting scenario if it ever presents itself.
If it ever presents. And you never know. Things like that happen on draft day. Like,
oh,
you
yeah.
You never know what can happen.
That's right.
You know?
No so doubt about it.
You have all of these mock drafts that say so-and-so is going to go at 10 to the Bills.
Right.
Well, and then it all gets messed up, usually around pick 6, 7. You start seeing trades come out.
Right.
Happen on the board.
All right, let's go back to our nicknames here. We are in the final eight, the elite eight. Let's get to the final four. Donald has already selected these that have already beaten other ones in the round of 16. We're going to go back to Night Train, Dick Night Train Lane, against your former teammate's nickname, Marshawn Lynch, Beast Mode. Night Train against Beast Mode. Who's going to the final four?
The better name than me, football, you got to go Beast Mode.
Beast Mode over
JJ
Night Train.
Out there like, no.
I like Night Train. I would choose Night Train. But Beast Mode, I get it, Beast Mode, and, you know, he's your buddy, so, you know, whatever.
No, not even that. But when you think you think football, you think Beast Mode.
You just don't like it that the Night Train name came from the fact that he didn't want to fly.
He didn't even want to fly. Like, he totally lost all credibility for his name because it's because he didn't want to fly. It wasn't because of what he did on the field.
No kidding, right?
So he just lost everything for me.
All right, I think this one's going to be easy for you, I think. Getting into the Final Four, Mean Joe Green or Sweetness? Mean Joe Green or Sweetness?
Got to go Sweetness, and we got to work on that for you at home, man.
I know.
Well, I'm not. I don't have anything to do with that. But
my wife texted and said, Sweetness, you must earn that nickname at home when I said that I wanted to be called that at home from now on. So Sweetness is what you're going with?
Yeah, I got to go Sweetness.
All right. The next half of the Final Four, we're going to – these are the regional final games.
Mm-hmm.
Here we go. Crazy Legs, Elroy Hirsch, against Primetime for Deion Sanders.
Prime
Crazy
time.
Legs against Primetime.
Got to go Primetime, baby.
Primetime. Wow. Over Crazy Legs. All right. So Deion Sanders wins there. And then finally in the Elite Eight of the ultimate NFL player nicknames, Assassin, Jack Tatum, the Assassin. So the Assassin against the Throwin' Samoan.
Got to go Assassin.
The Assassin. So we are down to, so everyone knows, here are the final four of our all-time nicknames. Beast Mode, Sweetness, Primetime, and the Assassin.
Right.
From Donald Jones. All right.
Maybe in our last segment, we can have some honorable mentions.
I would love to do that.
Could have been on.
Totally would love to do that. All right. You ready? So let's go. Let's do it now. Let's do Final Four.
Mm-hmm.
Beast Mode. Marshawn Lynch against Sweetness. Walter, but two running backs.
Gotta
going
go
at
with
it.
Sweetness on that one.
You like Sweetness.
I like Sweetness.
Why is that? Over Beast Mode.
Oh, man. Sweetness. I'm telling you something about that name. Like we talked about earlier in the show. That is
You know what's
great
about
name.
Those two names, though, and those two players? You think about them, how much they fit their names.
Yes.
Right? You think about Beast Mode for, I mean, you're supposed to fit your nickname, but just look at him even, right?
Yeah.
Marshawn, the more rugged guy, right?
Yeah.
He doesn't care.
He doesn't care at all.
He doesn't. You played with him, you know.
Yeah.
And Sweetness? He was pretty. He was a good-looking guy.
Mm-hmm.
He danced when he ran on the field. He was a marketing, gold mine for people if they wanted for commercials.
Yep,
it just worked, didn't
Sweetness.
It? Sweet. He was sweet. All right, so Sweetness moves on into the title game against either Primetime or the Assassin.
Primetime.
Wow. Primetime, Dion pulling off a bit of the. I thought it would be an upset here. I thought
you know
go
why
assassin.
Primetime because it's entertainment. Like, and I always say this: this is entertainment. At the end of the day, people take it so serious, like it's bigger than life. It's football. It's entertainment, and you're supposed to entertain the fans. And that's what he did on Primetime Monday night, Sunday night, Super Bowl stage. That's what he did. Got to go Primetime.
Okay, so here we go, ladies and gentlemen, the final matchup. For the all-time NFL nickname, only by the 16 that I included, which we will have some more we can get to.
Right.
It is Sweetness, Walter Payton, against Primetime, Deion Sanders. We don't care about the players. They're both great.
Right.
Both Hall of Famers, both two of the best ever at their position. Arguably maybe both the best at their position to ever play, right?
Yeah.
Sweetness against Primetime, what is the better and the best all-time NFL nickname?
To me, what you haven't earned yet at home.
Wow,
go Sweetness.
Sweetness. Sweetness.
Gotta go Sweetness, the best name.
I can't argue with Sweetness. I think
you
I can.
Could.
I could.
It's a great name.
When I looked at the original 16 that I came up with, I think Sweetness was like one that I thought could win. I thought maybe Crazy Legs or Night Train would be the ultimate winner here from you.
Yep. Nope.
But I like it. I like Sweetness.
I like Sweetness.
Do you remember how, I don't know if you're old enough, do you remember watching Walter play?
I've seen clips of him. No, I've never watched him. Yeah, I've seen clips. And you're talking about Sweetness, somebody who's smooth. Like you said, he's a good-looking dude. He was, I mean, everybody wanted to have him in commercials and all that stuff.
Yep.
And for me, I got to go with Sweetness, smooth and everything that they do. And, you know, he earned it.
He died way too young of an age.
Haven't earned it yet.
No, I have not, apparently. That's what we've been told. He died way too young. He was only 45 years old.
Yeah.
45 years old.
It's tough, man.
And he was an incredible football player and a man who also, by the way, won the NFL Man of the Year Award in 1977.
Yeah.
Walter Payton.
Walter Payton. And it's named after him now, right?
How about this? This is amazing when you think about this. Want to know how good he was? He was on the All-Decade team in two different decades, the 70s and the 80s.
That's crazy.
That's incredible. Think about the longevity you have to have.
Yes.
NFL 75th anniversary all-time team. The only thing that bothers me about Walter Payton, he never scored a touchdown in that Super Bowl. They gave the ball to Fridge, William Perry.
Yeah,
and even
like,
even Mike Ditka regretted it later. He said, I should have. But they gave the ball to William Refrigerator Perry on the goal line. Walter never scored a touchdown in his lone Super Bowl that they played in and won.
I mean, you know, it's the same as Beast Mode. They should have gave him the ball on the one-yard line.
That's right.
Patriots. So,
that's
right. I don't know. Maybe it's something against running backs in the Super Bowl at the end of the game. Don't give it to him. Throw the ball. It's a throwing league, man. These coaches, and they regret it. You make mistakes. Has Pete Carroll come out and said he regrets not giving them the ball?
No, I don't think so. I don't think they got along, those two. I think that's part of the problem.
Well, that's horrible, man. This is like the better of your team. What are you going to do here? Give them the ball on the one-yard line.
By the way, you know that Walter Payton's son, Jarrett, played in the NFL.
Yes.
His son, Jarrett, played in the NFL right around a little before you did.
Mm-hmm.
Tennessee Titans, 2005. He was still playing football when you were playing in the NFL. He's with the Chicago Slaughter in 2010. What league is that? That's got to be
like an indoor league somewhere. Probably.
Got to be an indoor league of some sort. Yeah. Indoor football league. Yep.
Yep. Indoor football league. It was Sweetness. He was a great running back. Probably the best ever. to do it. And like you said, he did die way too early.
Yeah, and I know like Emmitt Smith broke his record. I'd take Walter Payton.
I'd take Walter Payton any day over Emmitt Smith. Yeah. Emmitt Smith broke it because he played for so long.
And yes, Emmitt Smith played behind. I mean, I know Walter had some good lines, but Emmitt's line was one of the best ever for a good stretch of years.
Just like Ezekiel Elliott right now.
Which what he's got behind him as well. All right, good stuff there. We appreciate it. Sweetness is the ultimate champion in our nickname bracket challenge. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. We'll wrap things up here for the day on The John Murphy Show.
The John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And now, what have we learned from today's show?
All right, what have we learned? Presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater, and the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. We had Ross Tucker on a little earlier today, and we appreciate him coming on today when his own alma mater, Princeton, was in the middle of an NCAA tournament game here in Buffalo against Notre Dame. But he was on the phone. He was watching the game. He joined us. He talked a little bit about his thoughts on new Bills head coach Sean McDermott.
Huge fan of Sean. I've interviewed him a couple times when he was with the Eagles. He's a Philly guy, which I'm from near there as well. He went to LaSalle College High School. He actually went to William & Mary. Speaking of William & Mary, very, very bright guy. It feels, when you talk with him, like he has been groomed for this his whole life. He has been ready for this. I think they nailed it. I was really happy that the Bills made that hire. I mean, obviously the proof is in the pudding, but, you know, he was part of really successful organizations in both Philadelphia and Carolina. He's gone to a couple Super Bowls with different teams, so he's seen different ways to do it but still have success. And I like some of the coaching staff hires they already made, which is always a good sign as well.
Donald, you have some other nicknames that did not make my final 16. Some honorable mentions, right?
Yeah. So I have to go with the fridge, refrigerator.
Refrigerator William Perry, of course. Yeah, that was a great nickname for him.
That one, you know, our producer, Jay Harris, said he was also nicknamed the fridge.
Was he really?
Yeah. One of our producers has the nickname Tater.
You can
figure out who that one is as well. But you also, he hate me, which wasn't in, you know, NFL. He did have a short stint in the NFL. He hate me. Who else do you have? The freak?
Now, here's the thing. There are two freaks, Randy Moss and Javon Kearse.
Nah, true.
So, but it's a great name, right? But wasn't Randy Moss the freak?
When you think, he was. And when you think about the freak, do you think Javon Kearse?
I think Javon Kearse, but I think people who are now maybe in their 20s would think Randy Moss.
Yeah. The Minister of Defense?
Minister of Defense is a good one for Reggie White.
Reggie White?
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, that was good.
Now, that's not really a name nickname. It is just like a kind of a moniker, right? It's not really a name nickname. You don't call him.
True.
You just say he is the Minister of Defense. You don't.
Right.
It's not the name you call him, right?
True.
So,
Diesel.
Who's Diesel?
John Riggins.
Oh, yeah. Running back / fullback kind of type for the Redskins. But he played for the Patriots for a little while as well. The Bills did have had a couple famous nicknames, and they're both on the offensive line during the Super Bowl years. The House,
okay,
Howard Ballard, and then they got a bigger guy. He didn't play as much. The Condo, Jerry Kress, because he was even bigger. So they had the House and the Condo.
The Condo.
But Howard Ballard was a mainstay tackle for the Bills during Jim Kelly's heyday, and then they went out and they got Jerry Kress, who was actually even a little bit bigger, and they called him the Condo.
The Condo. Who was bigger than the house.
That's right. That's why they did that.
Were there
any other? I'm trying to think of other Bills nicknames over
You know, the
years.
Problem is nowadays, you know, these kids are self-proclaimed nicknames.
That's right. They are, right? That's like me telling my wife to call me Sweetness at home.
Exactly.
Right?
You haven't earned it yet. You've 14 years, you still haven't
Did you ever have any nicknames?
No, just DJ.
Did I say DJ, right? They would call you DJ. What's your middle name, can I ask?
Andrew.
All right, that's how the D.A. Jones comes about on Twitter, correct?
Yep, Donald Andrew Jones.
All right, I'm an A also in my middle name. It's a little different, so. but that's good. What about your son? What do you call him? Like, do you have any nicknames for him?
No. He's just
like Munchkin or anything to do that, right?
No, he's just Kion. The next one on the way is right now Peanut.
Wow, because it's just a peanut right now.
Just a peanut right now.
But, so, wait, do you call Kion? Do you call him KJ?
No. We just call him Cam.
Okay. All right. Well, that's interesting.
Call him by his middle name sometimes, Lamar.
But in case you missed us, we ran through. We had 16 nicknames that I came up with to do for our little tournament here. Donald narrowed it down. He got it to a Final Four. And the ultimate winner was Sweetness over Night Train, Crazy Legs, Beast Mode, The Galloping Ghost, The Assassin, Slingin' Sammy Baugh, The Amish Rifle, Primetime, Broadway Joe, Ed Too Tall Jones, Mean Joe Green, The Mad Stork, The Snake for Kenny Stabler, The Toe for Lou Groza, and The Throwin' Samoan for Jack Thompson.
Somebody tweeted me Ironhead.
Ironhead Hayward.
Yep.
Very good one.
Fast like Freddy Smith.
How about Billy White Shoes Johnson?
Yes, Billy White Shoes.
Billy White Shoes Johnson.
Someone also said Fast Freddy Smith, commonly confused with Fred Jackson.
Yes, because they called him, they also, I think they called him Fred X a couple times as well, which Fred was also called, right?
Yeah.
So maybe that's why he was sometimes called that as well. There's been some great ones over the years, for sure. I remember in Tampa, the A-Train was the original A-Train. Was
yes.
Mike Allstott.
Yes.
Mike Allstott was the original A-Train.
He was a beast.
Right? I know.
He was a beast.
He was a beast. All right. Hey, listen, thanks a lot for joining us here today. Murph will be back tomorrow, and we will have more updates for you from down at from the tournament going around. We'll also have a Chris Brown tomorrow, I believe, as well on the show.
Mm-hmm.
I want to thank everybody for being a part of the show. I don't have my list for all the guys to thank, so they know who they are. You know who they are. You talk about them every day here. Donald, thanks a lot, man. Good show. Appreciate it.
You.
We'll talk to you again soon tomorrow on the John Murphy Show here on WGR and MSG.